This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
And we're listening to KPFT Houston.
Excuse me, can I have your attention, please? Hey, kids, gotta get beat up every day after school. Some at before school, in the hall, and lunch after school. They wait for after classes, smash your glasses in 18 pieces. Rub your face in dog feces, spit food in your face in the cafeteria. Fill your milk with ammonia so you're choking, the whole crowd goes into hysteria. In the hall, they whistle at you, throw kisses at you, proposition you, push you into the bathroom and piss on you. In the classroom, they leave thumbtacks at your chair on the seat, trip you, then drag you down the stairs by your feet. Hang you upside down on the fence over by the soccer field, drag you naked from a speeding automobile. And all because you're queer. That's right, queer. You heard the magic word, as if an adult, I'm looking fair. They assure you, you're not a pervert, you can be cured. But if that doesn't work, they prefer to keep it all blurred. They say you must be questioning, they're confused. While they keep pestering, there's gotta be something to choose. And the pressure keeps festering till you can't stand it, you lit a fuse. While they desperately find someone, anyone to accuse. Like it's never a malady or happened accidentally. Like you can't think intellectually, have the mentality to understand sexuality. As you fast, you're tenacity to think independently. But here's my advice, take it literally.
Just run away to the hobby milk pool, and you never have to take another day of the cruel day.
The thugs and the fools and the cows and the rules, just leave this place and you'll never see the face again.
Just run away to the hobby milk pool, and you never have to take another day of the cruel day.
The thugs and the fools and the cows and the rules, and if you're gonna say them, sue every last one of them. Okay, so you try to go talk to the principal. You know the invisible man, the one that's only doing his job, that says you're the problem. It's a phone, it's live with this bazooka, and the car cops our brain. On the bottom outside, what's the bottom of your remains? Makes a kebab in your cranium. You tell him you documented every time you were bashed. He looks at the papers, takes the folder, and throws it in the trash. He says it's time for you to go, and why did you come here? But sir, I can't leave now, they'll throw me in the garbage dumpster. He says he's sick of hearing you rag, and if you didn't act like a fag, well then you wouldn't get beat up so much.
You say I'm touched, and thank you very much. I'm sure if I'm surrounded, you'll be there in the clutch, but I don't know if you noticed, but the crowd's getting restless below, and do you mind if I exit through your windows? I'll take the fire escape down and run for cover before they discover me and start chasing.
I can make it to the bus and hide behind the wheel casing.
Just run away to the hobby milk pool, and you never have to take another day of the cruel day.
The thugs and the fools and the cows and the rules, just leave this place and you'll never see the face again.
Just run away to the hobby milk pool, and you never have to take another day of the cruel day.
The thugs and the fools and the cows and the rules, and if you're gonna say then sue every last one of them. So they catch you one day, pin you to the wall, beat you within an inch of your life, carve the word faggot into your stomach with a pocket knife. You go to the counselor and show him the gashes. His solution is to put you in special ed classes. So you go to the police, tell them everything that's been happening. You lift up your shirt and show them the scar, they start laughing. They won't make an arrest because it's too much paperwork. You say thanks a lot if you're a safer jerk. So you finally find a teacher who's willing to assist you. So the kids boycott the class, say he must be a sissy too. And they transfer you from school to school, and all the administrators can talk about his immunity values.
Just run away to the hobby milk school, and you never have to take another day of the cruel day.
The thugs and the fools and the cows and the rules, just leave this place and you'll never see their face again.
Just run away to the hobby milk school, and you never have to take another day of the cruel day.
The thugs and the fools and the cows and the rules, and if you're gonna say this, do every last one of them.
Just run away to the hobby milk school, and you never have to take another day of the cruel day.
The thugs and the fools and the cows and the rules, just leave this place and you'll never see their face again.
Just run away to the hobby milk school, and you never have to take another day of the cruel day.
The thugs and the fools and the cows and the rules, and if you're gonna say that, then sue every last one of them. That's right, sue the teachers, the principals, the administrators, the school district, the police, sue the assistant to the assistant to the assistant to the dean, sue them all, make them pay.
We're happy to have you with us tonight and hope you'll come back often.
Hey!
So many people around us are frozen. When did they start to lose their fire? And innovated. It's time to dig around in our dark desires. Hit my cigarette and fire up your Corvette. Roll the windows down and toss out our clothes. Go for a spin with the wind out of their skin. Should we hit the driving like this? Do you suppose? Yeah. Inside. Yeah.
chase insecurity, we forget the passion, the hint of danger that we used to crave. That inner drive, the thrill to be alive, says a grown man's always gotta behave. Wait till it's dark and sneak down to the skate park, run to the beach and roll around in the sand. Hunt, dominate, or submit as the game calls for it. I'm down with that, anything you demand. You hide from daylight. Search of adrenaline rush, a fight or flight. Just let it all break out of the closet tonight. Yeah. Something primal in the pitch black behind our eyes. Part of us wants to howl at the full moon. Steal back the sanity before part of us dies.
Warning. The following program contains subject matter that portrays gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people as first-class citizens, deserving of an equal share of the American dream. Topics like this are known to piss off televangelists, backwater preachers, some talk show hosts, blue-haired biddies, several members of Congress, and other socially unacceptable outcasts like radical right-wing nut jobs. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
You have tuned into After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT 90.1 FM. The crew of After Hours is ready to bring you news, interviews, discussions, and music geared to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and our allies. We are a diverse group here, but we all have one thing in common. We are out of the closet and urge everyone to come out of his or her closet as well. That means recognizing who you are, standing up for yourself and your rights, and being proud of who you are. We understand that this might not be possible due to age, job, or frame of mind, but remember, we are here especially for you. So kick back and relax and get ready for this week's edition of After Hours.
Houston, Galveston, and the world. I decided to step on their feet and start talking ahead of time. This is After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude on KPFT. My name, it's,
You have the pad in front of you.
Yeah, I know what the songs were, but, you know.
No, it has the date on the pad.
Oh. Saturday, January 21st, 2006. Hi, we're doing a show in here, so thanks. My name is Chris Harrison. I'm the co-executive producer that's going to be having the Attitude tonight.
So what's new? And I'm Jimmy Carper. I'm the other one.
Yeah. He's finally smiling.
It's the adrenaline that kicks in once the show starts.
Ah.
No matter how crummy I'm feeling, it just kicks right in there.
I figured someone spiked your Diet Coke.
No.
We start off the show with Scott Free, Another Day of Cruelty.
Ah.
And then Project Vector, Out of the Closet.
Mm-hmm.
Since we couldn't figure out what to put together with them. Paul, we know Paul's here.
Yes, we certainly do. and that's what happens when I let Chris do the music. And it's a good thing, because with me you get the same kind of music week in, week out.
That's
and we have all kinds of good queer music that I kind of don't think about or slide over, and Chris is the one that can say,
I think I almost picked out Klaus Nomi. Almost. Maybe later.
Oh, we should. We never play enough Klaus Nomi.
You'll have to stay awake for that one.
Oh, it.
our guests are going, who's Klaus Nomi?
And if you're asleep, it'll wake you up.
It's when Germans go, it's when Germans go bad, but, you know, people aren't injured.
Yes.
Think of it that way.
Klaus Nomi was very avant-garde 20-some years ago, or more. Because 20-some years ago, actually 20 years ago, he was dead already. One of the earliest victims of the AIDS epidemic.
Yeah, after death, it's a little hard to be avant-garde.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, unless
but
you're
he
a really
was
good
so,
taxidermist.
So unusual.
Yeah. Well, do we do Ding Dong, or should we do...
He liked to do kind of operatic things. He liked to do Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead, in this incredible falsetto voice that made Jimmy Somerville sound like a baritone.
Maybe we ought to just spin the wheel when we put in his CD.
I think that's probably best.
Anyway,
that's some of the wonderful music, and we'll be hearing more of it as we go through this evening. This evening we have an evening with the Royals. Royalty from ICOH, the Imperial Court of Houston, Space City Empire. That's our After Hours Quickie. And the first segment after that is Black on Black, right?
Hopefully.
Yes.
With our new host.
Yes, absolutely. And a brand new segment after that.
Well, we don't know because we never told Diane Rose. You know, hopefully she's returning.
She's not returning tonight.
Who told her?
I did.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yes. Tonight is a brand new segment. It is poetry, queer poetry. We've got David, we've got Merlin, and a few surprise guests that are going to show up. And, I don't know, you know, they've done a little something every now and then with the poetry, and it's been a big hit. We've had lots of good calls, so we're going to do a monthly segment. Every third Friday, second segment. Now, Diane Rose will be here the second Friday of the month. She will be here, February, close to the Valentine's Day, huh?
Something like that.
Whenever it is, I don't know. Second Friday, whenever.
You're writing it backwards.
First segment.
I see 01 in mind. You've got a calendar in front of you over there.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they're trying to say over here.
Oh, they didn't bring the calendar, huh?
No. They're telling you to look at the calendar to see what...
Oh. Yeah, that would be easy, wouldn't it?
And of course, he called. Yeah. Now hold on. Didn't he just say she's going to be on the second Friday? But yet he tells me that we're on Saturday.
Officially, the show starts Saturday morning. But if you want people to listen, you better tell them it's Friday night, or they're going to be a day late.
That's and a dollar works. Short, which we are when it comes to pledge drive in 2 weeks.
Yes, indeed. In less than 2 weeks, I think.
I don't know. I'm not going to be here for the first week.
I know. And I'm barely going to be here. I'm moving, remember?
Yeah. He used muscles he didn't know he had before.
Oh, I knew I had them. Anyway, that will be...
Welcome to the Bitch Fest 95.
Yes.
And, you know, we'll bring out the old ones here.
Goodness, that will be... the second Friday is the 10th. So, late after midnight, 1 a.m. Saturday morning.
Whatever.
Yeah, okay.
Are we going to do the quickies or are we going to do calendar? What are we going to do?
We're going to do... Let's see. I only have two things.
I've got a couple. Let's see. Well, that's an ICOH, so they'll probably talk about that.
Okay.
That's the funny face I was making there looking at this. Tim Brookovers, there's no bingo like queer bingo.
There's no bingo like queer bingo. What?
Yeah. You're smart. If you pull the plug out like this, it makes the show a lot easier.
Well, Ginger Vitus is doing this queer bingo, and it's a salute to Broadway. So you expect to hear Ethel Hormone.
God. Yes, silence is maybe golden.
It's time for Evening of the Royals.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi, guys. How are y'all?
Hello.
Lovely. How are you doing?
Good. What drugs are you on?
And why the hell aren't you sharing?
He's not sure, no.
No. It's just adrenaline.
Okay.
Wow.
Go ahead.
We're the only ones that hear the feedback most likely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So how you doing?
Good, Jimmy. How are you?
Great. I have with me this evening Apollo Emperor Mark Cohen and Apollo Emperor 2. Right?
Right?
Did I get that right?
You
Keith Neville. Right. You don't get the number until after you
afterwards.
Finish the rain. Yeah. Okay. So how come we got two guys tonight?
Well, because the...
We got rid of her.
we shipped her off to Salem. Unfortunately, she'll be back on Monday.
I don't know. She could be burned, you know. They could burn her ass up there.
She took an outfit... Just in case.
In case she was going to be burned?
Yeah, you know.
Well, I know a piece of hair they could burn while they're there.
Well, yeah.
Ooh.
I think it's flame retardant. Not to be confused with
yes.
The person wearing it being flaming. But that's a different story.
It certainly is.
Yeah. But they, Chanel and our crown... Prince Royal, Jeff Wallace, headed to Salem, Oregon to spend the weekend.
Oh, that's Salem.
The other Salem.
Yeah.
Great Northwest. To spend the weekend with court members.
Gotcha. That's their coronation up there. Is that,
no,
is that what's going on?
Just kind of a fun weekend that Cam and Anissa are kind of planned.
Yeah,
oh, really?
Yeah. What do they call it? Salem's Monarch Express Weekend.
Exactly.
What the hell that means,
I don't know. You know, with those two, you just never know.
Isn't that the quick takeout line at the restaurant?
No comment.
Okay.
You know?
Are you trying to say that Jeff and Chanel are fast food?
From what I hear.
I don't have that experience.
I do have to say, Jimmy, you know,
yes?
Since y'all mentioned Klaus, don't forget one of my CDs, one of my driving CDs has Ding Dong on
That's
it.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. And I heard that the other night, and I was very impressed that someone as young as you had heard of Klaus Nomi.
I hadn't heard of him. I just, you know, was downloading some stuff on LimeWire and liked it.
Oh.
I was going to say, it's got to be a Bard CD.
Klaus Nomi is a contemporary, was a contemporary of David Bowie. Klaus Nomi.
Okay.
Hmm. And they were doing similar weird crap. Except Klaus really outdid him.
In weirdness?
You have heard the story you have heard the story of David Bowie doing Saturday Night Live and coming out in the in the fiberglass dress.
Right.
You know, where he couldn't move and doing all of this. Well, Klaus Nomi did similar stuff, only in a falsetto voice. That really freaked people out.
I bet it did.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
So
I hear you're moving.
Oh, God. Yes.
Does anyone not know this already? Because you just like every 5 seconds you announce it.
Yeah, it's part of that angst thing. And, you know, that don't you feel sorry for me because I have so much to move stuff.
Funny you don't look Jewish.
I've been married to one for 27 years.
There you go.
See, and I still have
Jewish by injection.
Yes.
I still have a big piece of equipment at my apartment waiting for Jimmy, too.
Yes, he does.
Speaking of Jews and big equipment.
Yeah, it must run in the in Jewish families.
Don't look at me. Yes, it does. You want me to drop my pants and you can figure that one out?
Honey, you don't have to drop your pants.
You've seen it before.
Your religion is very noticeable in them.
Rather pronounced.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Why are we here?
This is
starting to sweat.
Beats the hell out of me, and I'm running the board.
There you go.
This is an evening with the royals, so, you know, this is the classy part of the show.
Oh, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I know. Mm. So, what's going on with ICOH? Other than Chanel.
You're raining, I'm not.
See, I was trying to delegate there, and it just didn't work.
It doesn't work. No, not with it. No.
You know, we're raising money for Lazarus House this year.
And let me tell you, I love Lazarus House.
That's right, you started working out there.
God, even though I am so sore.
It's painful, but long range.
First few weeks, yeah.
Exactly. So that is our primary...
it's an exercise and nutrition place for people with HIV, AIDS, people with cancer, people with MS, people wheelchair bound.
Right.
And
to help with the gaining of muscle mass.
Absolutely.
Which is very important, especially if you're immunocompromised.
Yes.
And it was when Chanel and I made the decision to make them our main beneficiary, mm-hmm. we just thought it was a very wise one. To do, because they are just kind of getting off. They've only been established for a few years now.
That's right.
So we thought that would be a good avenue for
mm-hmm.
us to kind of put our efforts to. And next week, this week is kind of light because Eresus is doing their coronation tomorrow night.
That's right.
But,
you know where that's happening?
It is at the
Marriott West Loop by the Galleria.
By the Galleria.
Okay.
Right.
Yes. I know quite a few ICOH people are going to this.
A lot of folks are going just mm-hmm. to kind of see. They have two candidates for Empress,
mm-hmm.
Lillian Devereaux uh-huh. and Dee Dee DeMarco.
Right.
And to see who steps up as Empress and then who is chosen as their regent emperor.
Yes.
So that should be very exciting.
And, of course, a step down
congratulations to their stepping down emperor and empress, Christopher Garrett and Jackie Thorne.
Yeah. And I know Jackie has been really busy this year because she normally stops in once or twice a month on After Hours, and she just hasn't had the time to do it. You know, because I know they do a lot of shows down in Galveston and and every other kind
utilize different venues here.
Yeah.
Right. No, it
keeps, and we've missed her.
Keeps people busy, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it does.
But the following week, on the 27th, we will be doing a show over at EJ's, and that will be hosted by Jeff Wallace and Rose Smith, and that's going to be titled Dirty Secrets.
The 27th, what?
27th, which is a Friday.
Friday, okay.
Friday the 27th. And that will start
Dirty
about 8:30. Dirty Secrets. And God knows we're a bunch of queens and we've got plenty of secrets and most of them are dirty.
Yeah.
Not you.
That's because you tell them.
They're not secret. There you go. Bingo, Jim. The following evening, over at Mary's Naturally, Starlight Empress Eartha Quake.
Sounds right.
Yes.
Will be hosting an annual event that she does, which is called Blue Haired Ladies on Gym.
Ooh.
Which is just a real raunchy type show.
I hope so.
And to have it at Mary's just follow suit.
Yeah.
That will be at 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
What? I'm just laughing.
We can bring Shameless in if you want.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Oh, listen, we always have a lot of fun when Shameless is here. She doesn't always remember it, but...
Yes, place for her to nap.
Yeah. Actually,
What?
Actually, she's had a change in heart, and she's been doing a lot less drinking, and so a lot less napping.
Good for her.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And in fact, I've heard through the grapevine that if Judy is well enough, that Shameless and Judy will be attending the Aresis function tomorrow night.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes.
Hopefully Judy will be in better spirits.
Actually, I got a late email from her. She's been sick all week, poor thing.
Right.
But she's got a new medication, and she's just feeling a whole lot better.
Good.
Late tonight. Whole lot better than she's felt all week. So, maybe she'll let me come over now.
Prozac has that effect on a lot of people.
Yeah, but it usually takes a month.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Who knows?
Oh, Lordy.
Who
knows? Okay, so what's next on the horizon for ICOH? I mean, we can go into February, unless you have more to go in January.
The only other two things going in January is both this coming Sunday and the following Sunday, the 22nd and 29th, we will be bartending on the patio of EJ's from 4 to 8.
Is that because there's five Sundays?
Five Sundays. We do the fourth, and if there's a fifth, you know, heaven forbid we should refuse a fifth of anything.
Yeah.
We grab it.
That just wouldn't be right.
It wouldn't be right. So we will be, different court members will be behind the bar there on the patio. And hopefully the way the weather has been lately, it'll be just an enjoyable time this Sunday.
And, of course, all the tips go to...
All the tips. The way that we're doing with the tips is that the individuals, the court members who are hosting it, are able to determine... what beneficiary those should go to.
Oh, okay.
So that's what we classify as a direct benefit.
Okay.
So those dollars go to whatever charity has a special place in their heart.
Wonderful.
Yeah, which is really
so what's on the books for February?
Looks like quite a bit for February.
Got a busy month.
Mm-hmm. I see on Friday, February 3rd, Montana is hosting her fourth annual birthday show. Now, I know she has been under the weather.
Yes,
I spoke to her Monday night, actually.
Mm-hmm.
She's feeling a lot better. She's
Sounds
been in the hospital.
Better.
Yes, she has.
But is, even from there, making arrangements for this birthday show.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
God, what a trooper.
Let's see, what is this? Oh, I was looking at this Saturday, February 4th, a night out with the CPRs for the rest of the court, because the board will be in Galveston for the retreat that
that's
weekend.
Right. That's right. Oh, my God.
Saturday
that's
and
right.
Sunday.
That's the retreat.
Right around the corner.
Oh.
So we get to desert them, head down to Galveston.
Yeah. Good way to escape all those boxes I will not have unpacked yet.
They'll still be there.
Oh, I know, I know.
Hmm. The following weekend looks busy. Friday, June 10th, Gingervitis is hosting Ginger's Love 'em and Leave 'em Valentine's Show.
Oh. as only she can.
Hmm. How many has she left already?
I'm not going there.
Do you have to leave them before you love them before you leave them?
Well,
kind of hard to leave them before you love them. I don't. Okay. Hell, I don't know. Okay.
You know, if you hang out at the tubs, you can do.
There you go.
You can just hundreds. Yes.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't
know. Voice of experience.
Indeed it is.
Okay.
Should we go into how much experience
we learned
a couple years ago?
No, that's quite all right.
Have your own personal golden arches.
Yeah, well, let's save some mystery.
Hmm. Kind of funny.
Yeah, if it's been more than 100, what does it matter, you know? 100, 10,000, what's the difference? Yes? That's over a lifetime, not per year.
Okay.
Thank you.
How many cans of Crisco does that equate out to?
I should have bought stock. That's okay. All I can say. Okay. That's all I can say.
Oh, God. You know, that Crisco comment. Now, I'm just thinking, because I had dinner with Regina Dane and Chris Salsa tonight, mm-hmm. and we were discussing Brokeback Mountain. And nobody prepared me for the first sex scene in that movie, which, as Regina put it, the spit and shove scene.
Yeah, you didn't notice that?
I about sucked the air out of the theater when I saw that.
How do you think it used to be done?
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm just shocked to see it on screen.
Oh. That's the way I got it
and
the first time.
And not be watching it on video at home.
That's how real cowboys do it.
Yes. Yes.
Well, you know, on February 12th, I see ICOH has a gospel show.
And we're going to need it.
A gospel show hosted by Slut of the Year.
Yeah. Whoa.
He's got a lot of praying to do.
Mm-hmm.
I could make some comments.
That's
but
like,
no, I'm not.
That's like 10 o'clock in the morning, isn't it?
No.
Noon.
And that is Craig Farrell and Judy Reeves.
Well, 10, that. Noon. You know, it's all the same for
you,
me.
It's the same.
Yeah.
It's a gospel show, and I promise, because what else should you serve at a gospel show but lox and bagels? So we'll have a lox and bagels breakfast.
I thought you were going to say donut, something holy.
Oh, God. I'm not, obviously not.
Yes.
Obviously not.
And then, of course, what we're leaving out is every Wednesday.
The jukebox show.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. Become an institution with ICOH. And a hell of a lot of fun.
They are. They are fun.
Well, especially if you're not the one doing the jukebox. You know, I despise doing it and refuse it every chance I get.
But you had a great time when you and Kelly hosted that jukebox show.
Yes, we did have fun. Yes, but I wasn't in it, remember? I hosted.
You hosted?
I hosted. Right.
Which is a good thing.
It's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Yeah. But that's pretty much what...
And that's like every Wednesday night,
every
9 o'clock.
Wednesday.
9 o'clock-ish at Mary's.
And the other very cool thing that we've started, and you kind of were the honoree this month,
mm-hmm.
is we are doing a monthly birthday celebration.
Yes.
At Mary's. Which is not a show. Gee, novel concept.
Yeah.
Just kind of to get together, celebrate whoever's birthday it is within that respective month. And
a purely social thing. And it was a whole lot of fun because, you know, it wasn't like it's going to cost you a whole bunch of money, yeah. you know, or anything like that. Not that it...
All the free junk food that you
yeah!
Eat, all
I was
sorts
amazed.
Of stuff. It was great.
The most amazing guacamole. Oh, so good.
Yes, I heard about Rose's guacamole.
Yes. Oh, man. I ate my weight in it. It was so good.
That's not much.
That's not much, no.
Well, I admit there was some left over. Hey.
That happens.
Yeah, I know. I'm working on that.
As you should.
Mm-hmm.
As you should.
That's what.
And you got the sore muscles to prove
yes,
it.
Yes,
huh?
I do. Mistress Danielle has been working me hard. Yes, I have. She is Mistress Danielle to me now and forevermore. And we've been talking about the virtues of eggs and beef.
Protein.
Mm-hmm. Lots of it. And she wants me to eat more.
That's right.
Which is fine with me.
You just have to eat the right type of beef.
Yeah. Oh?
Right. Well, you can eat that also because there's plenty of protein in that. But the type that you put in a skillet or on a broiler, that type of meat, you've got to eat the right type.
Yeah, okay. She's going to talk to me more about it next week.
She sure will.
Mm-hmm. Okay, gang, I guess we've got to cut this. Not that I want to because I'm having fun, but we've got another segment waiting.
Absolutely.
I hope.
Yes.
Do we?
Did we wake
Wonderful.
You up?
Evidently not.
I was just a spectator at Amtrak Radio, that's all.
Gotcha. Okay. Why don't we go to a piece of music?
Kosnome.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Keith, for being here tonight on Evening with the Royals.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll see you again next month.
Oh. Welcome to the colored section. Welcome to the Negro League. Sign your name on the blacklist and know this, it's American history. See what it is to be blackmailed.
Blackmailed.
See a real life conspiracy.
Ooh.
Sign your name on a blacklist and know this, it's American history.
Thank you for joining us on Black on Black here on 90.1 KPFT, the radio station that listens to you. I'm your host for the new year 2006, Christopher Evans. I want to wish everyone a happy new year 2006. And as we go into this new year, I want to request your participation in this show. And we want to give kudos to Dion for leaving such a great legacy for us. On this show, we have special guests in the studio, and I'm going to try to remember their names. We have Tyrone.
Hey, what's up?
Thank you. We have Larry.
Hello.
And we have Billy.
Hello.
On the show. And today what we're going to discuss is we're going to talk about manhood versus masculinity and effeminacy in the black community, and then more specifically in the black gay community. So what we're going to start off is on a scale of 1 to 10 here in the studio. If you would rate your masculinity as you see it from our guests, starting with Mr. Tyrone.
Okay, I don't understand. You want me to rate my masculinity?
As you see it, on a
as
scale
I see it.
Of 1 to 10, and this is it, 1 being not masculine at all, and 10 being hyper-masculine.
Wow. Okay. I guess I'm probably a 7 or 8.
Okay. Mr. Larry?
I would say 8.
And Billy?
I'd say 5.
Okay. Now, what we're going to talk about is, as far as the black community is concerned, my observation is that the black community is more concerned with a man's masculinity, what he shows on the outside, that he portrays a certain type of attitude, demeanor, or mannerisms, and we've actually forgotten about manhood. What are your observations on how the black community...
You know, I think it's unfortunate that we are at a place where we have to gauge ourselves by, you know, this outer shell, this external, this physical state, that we make judgments of who people are based on what we see, not actually getting to know them. So I if you can say the African American community is more concerned with aesthetics.
Exactly.
As opposed to the core value or ethical values, you know, that's a hard call. That's a hard call. That's a hard statement to make. That may be true. I think our society in general conditions us, because we lived in a paternalistic society, and masculinity or maleness is praised. It's put on such a pedestal that it's seen as a strength. And femininity is seen as a weakness. We condition ourselves, we condition our children to become strong leaders, become strong people.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sort of predispose our children to this hyper masculine behavior that is not natural. I believe, you know, masculinity or the appearance of being a man has got nothing to do with one's sexuality or one's sexual orientation, but or one's strength or one's weakness. But no matter what, we want our children to grow up and our boys to be boys and our girls to be girls. So we are put into these boxes, these rigid boxes that very few people fit in.
Okay. Larry, Billy?
I'd have to concur with Chris. I'm not very masculine in the sense of in the look, in the sense of my look or whatever, but I feel that I'm a strong individual when it comes to my character, my integrity, and my responsibility. So
you're speaking more towards your manhood rather than your
masculinity.
Manhood,
definitely so.
Larry, you have an observation concerning that?
Well, I know that with my family, I'm using that as a reference, they tend to accept my homosexuality because of the fact that I'm more masculine. I have a cousin that's more feminine, and their position with him is sort of different because they don't understand a man having more feminine qualities. So I can definitely say that there is a difference on the way African Americans treat males that are masculine versus males that are more feminine.
Do you think there's something unattractive about effeminacy, or is it just unattractive on men?
That's a personal statement. You know, sexuality, I don't know what motivates me sexually. I mean, I don't know what, when there's this core chemistry of who I'm who I'm sexually attracted to. You know, everybody has their own, you know, I mean, the sexuality, you know, one's personal sexuality, there's a range. I don't believe there is truly, there are very few completely heterosexual people, and I think there's very few completely homosexual people. I think that, you know, there's this whole gray area that is not discussed in our society, that is not accepted in our society. So when it comes to, you know, my attraction to people, I mean, damn, I'm attracted to a range. There's not any, you know, I'm attracted to a range, and whether that person is masculine or feminine, I don't know if that always has a plays on that attraction.
Okay, what I've noticed recently is there is this popularity of the hypermasculine male within the black gay community. Everybody wants a hardcore thug. I'm not going to use the N word, but everybody seems to want that. What part do you think the hip hop community has played in this sudden? Well, I don't think it's sudden. I think it's been gradual, but right now it's very prominent that, you know, I want a masculine, no fat, no femmes, and you see that in ads on all types of single websites, or, you know, people looking to date or hook up. What do you think hip-hop's responsibility or hip-hop's effect has been on black gays pushing this or making it as popular as it's been? Larry, Billy, Tyrone, you don't think hip-hop has played a role?
I don't really think that it's played that big a role on, you know, a person's personal preference.
Mm-hmm.
You have some that go out and look for the hardcore type, and then you have some that really don't know what they want at all.
Okay.
So, you know, that's preference. It's more or less preference, really.
Billy, what do you mean by preference? What do you mean by preference?
Not everyone is looking for a hardcore type individual. Some like them femme. Some like them more masculine. Some like them more feminine. It's just a person's personal preference.
I think that
some like them black. Some like them white. Some like them, you know, mixed.
I think the what Chris is saying, this popular culture or this need for this hyper masculine male, is it is the hip hop culture promoting that in the gay community especially? And my opinion is that it is. I believe that we are in America, we are bombarded with media every single day. And popular music, popular culture, television. America sees me as a certain way. And I have to live within that interpretation of how America sees me. And so within that interpretation of how America sees me as this black man, this African American, hyper strong, hard man, of course there's something attractive about that. Of course that is. And of course this society that puts that on a pedestal, of course that affects me every single day. I mean, of course it does. And in the community, in the gay community, like any other community, in the African American gay community, well, we are consumers of popular culture. And popular culture dictates that the man that you should be in love with is this
hyper masculine man, this masculinity that is this unnatural masculinity. Because, you know, I believe that, you know, there is no, I mean, this, if you have to prove your manhood by your masculine behavior, then there's a weakness there.
Do you think the community is suffering from femophobia?
I believe so. Yes, I do. Not all men that are in the black gay community are those hip-hop, low-sling, slung pants-wearing guys that are hyper-masculine. You do have some guys that are more, what word can I describe it as just your normal average guy. Not all guys are, you know, wear the low slinging pants or super buffed or whatever.
But Billy, the Chris asked, is that what we crave? I mean, honestly.
I'm not craving it.
Okay. Okay. But in general, I believe that at the end of the day, in the community, if we think of our ideal sexual partner, that sexual partner will be this hyper masculine, yo, what's up guy. You know what I mean?
I disagree with you.
I believe that African American men have a pressure to be ultra masculine, and I think that's why a lot of guys, 50 Cent, the different rappers, feel this need to perpetuate this hyper masculine man, because we've all been conditioned that that's what a man is.
Attractive.
That's what a man is. Masculine.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at popular culture. You have a choice today, this moment. Is Nelly or is RuPaul walked in this room and says, yo, let's have a date? Who are you going to go out with?
I'm going with Nelly.
It depends upon whether okay. You are what type of guy that you're looking for.
No, that's why I said. I'm not talking about
preference.
You. I'm talking about you specifically. What are you looking for? If Nelly walks in this room and says, yo, what's up, Billy? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Let's hook up.
Well, I'm not into the more feminine guys because I'm of the softer sex myself.
I don't understand that.
RuPaul would not be attracted to me.
Why is that? Because sexuality and sexuality and the appearance of sexuality are two different things. And why would you not necessarily be attracted to someone that is feminine? Why do you see? Because you're taking on heterosexual, stereotypical role models that say that if you're feminine, that you have to follow the stereotypes of this. You're reenacting this heterosexual community. Or are you looking for a hookup with someone that's a totally different interpretation of your sexual preference or your sexual reality? Does it have to be mandated by society?
I'm looking for the latter that you just mentioned. I'm not looking for RuPaul.
Okay, let me ask.
But when RuPaul peels off that shell, he looks like a masculine man underneath.
Lies.
So
lies.
Yes.
I disagree with you on that.
Lies. Let me ask this question. Do you think effeminate men in the black community are becoming extinct?
Because we have to be honest, there is a pressure to be masculine. Because you're not going to go to the mall.
You're not going
to
find as many effeminate men as you would, let's say, those ones that are perpetrating the more masculine sect of it. But no, I don't think that they're, you know.
What do you think, Larry? I think that the a lot of the feminine guys are feeling pressure as well to be masculine. I've seen a surgence of this new group of feminine guys, the what we might call thug sexuals. They dress like 50 and Nelly, but they still
have
right. And that's really a shock to the system there.
That makes a question.
Why is it a shock to the system?
Because when I see someone looking like 50 Cent coming toward me, I expect
50 Cent,
right, no, and not 25 no. Cent. So,
I'm going to ask a question. Are African American men held to a different benchmark of masculinity versus their Anglo-Saxon American counterpart.
Okay, well, let me answer this question by answering your last question. There will never be a shortage of effeminate African-American males because in American society, the African-American male, you know, was indoctrinated into this culture as a slave, and his place in this culture has always been this brutish slave kind of this iconography of who he is has always been this brutish hyper masculine historical context. So I don't believe that American society will always grow, but it will always perpetuate that image of African American males. I think that our Greco-Roman kind of slavery heritage in this country will always lend itself to that type of interpretation. But I don't believe, because of the pressure of being a hyper-masculine African-American male, will always, I believe, always be there, that there will always be those that defy the norm.
Okay.
So there will always be a feminine. And if you ever notice that if you're in the gay community, that gay or effeminate African-American males are not just effeminate. They are hyper-effeminate. So I believe that there will always be, in this community, there will always be this reaction to this pressure of being masculine, and the reaction will always be an effeminate interpretation of that personality. I think that paradigm will always exist in the African-American community.
Okay, let me ask this. Is it genetics or is it a learned behavior? Either one of them, the masculinity or the effeminacy.
I think it's conditioned. That this pressure to be hyper-masculine. I mean, people that are naturally masculine will be masculine. People that are naturally feminine will be feminine. But we're speaking of this hyper context that a lot of people feel like they have to perpetuate because of this pressure that's on African American men. So you're going to be either hyper masculine or hyper feminine as a result of that pressure to be
one or the other.
Right.
Okay.
I feel that you can just be yourself. Now, how it's interpreted on how someone else, how it appears to someone else, that's their interpretation. But if you just be yourself. Now, if it comes across to another individual as being more hyper-masculine or hyper-feminine, that's their interpretation of it.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, in our society, the pressure, I don't think we really realize.
And the pressure is really to be yourself, really.
I don't think we realize the pressure that society, the outside pressures that society places on our psyche. We are preconditioned and we are conditioned on a daily basis, and it's continuously reinforced every single day. When people see you, when they see me, their interpretation of who I am is going to affect who I actually become. If you see me as a lawyer, then if you interpret who I am as a lawyer or as a CEO of a company or as this hype or this thug that's going to rob your place of business, then I promise you that's going to have some type of effect on me, either directly or indirectly. You know, I wish we lived in a society where you could really be true to who you are. I think we would see more of a range of sexuality, of interpretation of who we are. But, you know, the truth is that we are given, in American society, we are given these certain mandates. And we have to either find ourselves in this box or outside this box. But either way, we're reacting to who we are still becomes a derivative of American popular culture and the pressure of in America popular culture.
So at what stage do you teach a child or start to teach a child that they have the right to live outside of the mandate?
Children, you know, when the child is born, and I believe that our society right now, you know, people are talking about, you know, I believe that the behavior is preconditioned, and it's also part of one's own DNA. You know, I think that one may be
predisposition to be a certain way, but we are also taught to socialize and to fit in and to survive in our culture, and that survival technique makes us put on drape ourselves with these suits of masculinity or femininity or whatever we believe is going to lead the most positive outcome for mm-hmm. ourselves. You know, and we have to drape ourselves in that. It becomes a shield.
Okay. Now, what I've never heard are lesbians deal with this issue. Do they deal with issues of masculinity and femininity?
Now, I don't think it's fair for me to speak for lesbians.
I know they're none. Yeah. In the studio.
Many things, but I don't see myself as a lesbian today.
But based on being out and in the community, I've never heard this discussion among them or it being an issue.
You don't have to hear the discussion. You can see the behavior. Come on.
But they seem very satisfied, though.
That's not always true.
But they're still female and they're not dealing.
Well, society deals with females much more different than they do with males. So.
No. So they don't get
and
the same pressure.
Irregardless to
be a male.
Whatever way a woman appears, she's still going to be a woman to a man that's hyper-masculine.
I disagree. I think the exact same paradigm that we see in the African-American male community, it is repeated continuously in the African-American female community. There's no difference. How many hyper-masculine lesbians do we know, African-American hyper-masculine females do we know? I know many. And I know many that are more masculine than 50 Cent ever thought about being.
And they're more accepted also. So,
but they don't have the type of discussion within their community. You don't hear them say, I don't want that lipstick, no lipstick.
Again, that's not a fair... It's we're outsiders. It's not fair for us to say that because there's not a panelist here that is a lesbian. I can't speak for lesbians, and I just don't think it's fair for us to.
Well, I'm speaking for them.
I think that
it doesn't take place.
That the female lesbian that's more masculine is emulating the hyper males that they've probably encountered. I think they have the same get the same images of males that males get. So when you see a hyper masculine female walking around grabbing her genitalia or what have you in the front like a male would, that's all I think the images that she's gotten as far as hyper-masculine men are concerned.
Do you think it's natural?
I have to step in real quick and let everyone know you're listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude, here on listener-sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org.
Thank you. Yeah, you do that so well.
I usually do it faster. But
and what an attitude we have today.
With attitude. How about that?
Let's talk about Brokeback Mountain. In the case where...
Another movie with no black people in it.
Well, they were in Utah. Come on.
I don't think black people have to be in everything.
I have an issue with any major American film with no black people, not even in the background. I just believe that it just perpetuates this us against them attitude.
Uh-huh.
And as Americans, especially in the gay community, this overt racism.
Okay, well, that'll be another show. Right now, we're talking about Brokeback Mountain and the instance where do you think the black community is ready for a movie on of that magnitude with major black actors? Because what Brokeback Mountain has done is broken the stereotype. Someone wrote an article. His name is Leonard Pitch Jr. And he wrote that Brokeback Mountain didn't offer homophobic people nice, cute, quiet gay males like Queer Eye for the straight guy or from some decorating show. They offered the iconic symbol of masculinity when they put cowboys who fall in love with no resemblance of femininity. Is the black American community ready for a movie of that magnitude with major black actors playing parts such as the ones portrayed in Brokeback Mountain?
I don't believe so, and I don't know of too many actors African-American that I can think of that is ready to step into a role like that right now.
With the DL thing that's going on, do you think black people have become more uncomfortable with sexuality because they, with the DL, supposedly they're not as easily identified? So does that make it more uncomfortable?
Okay, in our society, we still feel the pressures of being masculine. The black community in our popular media culture has very limited interpretations of we have very limited representations of black folks in general in popular culture. Like, again, Brokeback Mountain with no black people in it. I mean, how many movies are made with no black folks in it? And if you see, the only black person that you see is a gay person, that sticks with you and that sticks with the black community, and really that sticks with that actor's career. These actors can go on and do other things, but I promise you, if Will Smith was in Brokeback Mountain, his career would be changed, because the only interpretation that we have of him is this gay male. Now, it's strange enough, Will Smith had a problem when he did Six Degrees of Separation. With kissing a man. He had a problem with that. And the reason is the pressure in the black community of because we have limited representations of who we are anyway. And if the only interpretation of who we are is this gay character, then that actor's career is limited to that. And it's a shame, but that's how it is.
Okay.
But he walked away from there regretting that he made that decision. He later realized that he should have taken that role. He should have been brave enough to take that role.
But he wasn't. He right. wasn't, and the truth is there's going to be few, and our career, and popular media, popular culture doesn't have enough of us there anyway. So
we're going to take a call.
All right. It's a voice from the past, not so distant past, but I have to let you know. Dion, you are on the air.
Good morning, fellas.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good morning. Excellent topic. Listen, a couple of things. You asked the question of whether or not black males are held to a higher standard. Is that what you said, Chris?
Well, I interrupted myself.
Okay.
When I did that, but the question actually was: are African American males held to a higher benchmark of masculinity than their Anglo-Saxon counterparts?
Okay, Anglo-Saxon. Okay. One of the things that came to mind was a conversation or dialogue that took place when we did the one dialogue session with straight black males' views on gay black males.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And a couple of comments that came out of that was how the straight community, the straight black community, male community, felt that to be effeminate was
a sign of weakness.
Yeah.
And I got very upset
about
that.
You remember?
Right. I do.
So in terms of whether or not we're held to, you know, a higher standard, I think the answer is yes to a lot of individuals who are coming from that more masculine masculine side. Now, it's not right, and Billy, you said that, so maybe you want to say a little bit more, but, you know, I'd say just based on that conversation alone, and it was a mix of both the straight, you know, black males and, you know, the gay black males, the answer would be yes to that one.
And I think one of the points came out was that was based on your view. And I think we also discussed that because Tyrone brought this up, that we discussed how black males are viewed, that black males feel like masculinity is the only thing that we possess and hold in America. And if you start to chip away at that, being an effeminate male or being gay, then what you're doing is single-handedly bringing down the black community.
You're relinquishing your power. I mean, if our society is male-dominated and we see males as a power source, if you attribute yourself to effeminate behavior as a male,
you're
relinquishing your power. And who wants to give away their power? What do you think?
Well, my point that I was making with the guy that had made that statement that straight males had to say to African American gay males was that it takes a very strong-minded individual to put on a dress and to say, well, okay, I'm just going to go against the rules that are set up in our community that says that, okay, if you wear a dress or whatever, then you're considered to be one of the lowest, or you're considered to be very weak in this community or whatever. And it takes a strong-minded individual to say, I'm going to go against the grain. I'm going to go against what our society dictates and do what I feel that I'd like to do and do what I feel that I'm all about and what I'm representing. So it that means that I have to subject myself to ridicule, to shame, to fights, to physical abuse or whatever. Then that may be.
And then that's where the difference comes in between masculinity and manhood.
And how many, right. And then how many are those guys that are out there fighting me willing to do the same thing or stand up for whatever they think that they believe in and how they actually feel?
Now, see, what I'm hearing from you, Billy, on that comment, you're taking it from a standpoint of, yeah, let's talk about the strength of being able to actually go through with this and, you know, stand out in the community and be yourself.
Exactly.
That's a personal thing.
Right.
And by all means, yes, that does take some courage, some major strength on your part or anyone's part. I think what tends to take place is that people have made comments coming from an outside source. So they're not those individuals who get up every morning, who, you know, get out there and put on a dress or, you know, whatever. They're taking it from, you know, this is me. This reflects me as a race.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
exactly.
So what I mean by that is we're talking about internalized stereotypes about the dominant culture that may have negative repercussions in such a way that anything considered negative to others has a reflection on the entire African-American race.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're hearing. So when you ask the question whether or not we're held to higher standards, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. it's unfortunate, but, you know, from two sides, that's exactly what we're hearing.
Okay.
The other comment was in reference to the lesbian community. I think somebody already said it. Yes, there are the same standards being held there. And I'm saying that because I can recall a couple of counselors or doctors that I've worked with. When I bring forth a client who's of more masculine nature, and she'll speak of some of the concerns that she's dealing with in society, in the community, that kind of thing at home. And some things may come off as, well, it's based on, you know, your dress. Why don't you change your dress? That is what that's what the response, the suggestion was to that person. And of course, the young lady's like, well, what are you talking about?
Dion, let me ask, but within the lesbian community, do they stereotype or hold a phobic attitude towards women that are more masculine or women that are more effeminate? Because within the black gay community, there are a lot of guys, I don't want any guy that's acting like...
He's speaking of when you read the personals, Dion.
Exactly.
Mostly of what we're... most of the personals are requesting, well, I don't want anyone that appears to be more feminine, someone that I could walk down the street with in society and not really draw that much attention to. So...
That's a good one. I can't answer that one. I'm coming from the perspective of the outside. You know, so I'm not certain about the inside. That's a good question.
I would imagine that.
I will say, however, when you look at African American women, lesbianism is incompatible with role expectations in the black community for women.
Okay,
so we know that. Now, how far? Good question. I mean, you know, some research that was done, and it's been a long time, you know, so maybe some things have changed, but, you know, back in 98, they were talking how it's more accepting to be, you know, a heterosexual woman. However, what we're seeing now is a lot of women from the lesbian black community, they are parents.
Okay.
You know, so when you talk about the expectations of producing a family, yeah, they're still doing it. You know, so I think there's a question of whether or not they're, yeah, they are experiencing the same animosity within their own. I don't know. That's a good question.
Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen. Doing
thank
a fabulous
you.
Job. Fabulous.
Thank you.
By the way,
thank you.
J.L. King is going to be at... okay, fine.
Love you, Dion.
Oh, my God.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Dion.
What do y'all think about that? Okay.
What do you mean?
I am going to get a black lesbian panel in here, and we're going to discuss some of those things.
Yeah.
We need to discuss the raising of black gay males raising black little boys. Is their masculinity, manhood in jeopardy if they are raised by a black gay male or a black gay male couple?
I don't believe so, because I don't believe that anybody raised me to be gay. I just believe that I am. And nobody raised me to be that way. So I wouldn't take a child and necessarily raise them in a gay manner. Hopefully I would raise him with values and give him or her the tools to become the person that they were destined to become. I think that a lot of people, society, have fears about gay people raising children because they have that mentality that since you're a gay individual that you would want to raise your children to be gay, and that's just not true at all.
Okay. I think we have a call.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hello, Jennifer.
Hey, Jennifer.
Hi.
I was calling in response to the lesbian community questions.
Okay. Are you lesbian, Jennifer?
Well, you know, I'm actually bisexual, but
okay. So,
at the time that I was involved in the community in general, I actually considered myself to be entirely lesbian.
Okay. And, can I ask you a question, Jennifer?
Yeah.
And Chris asked us this question when we started out. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being being masculine and 10 being highly feminine, where are you?
Well,
make her answer that.
It's a complicated question because...
Is it?
Yeah, it is. And I think that you might actually understand this also. I mean, as far as looks go... I'm highly feminine.
Okay.
But then again, I've been in a relationship with a woman who looked more masculine, but I had to take out the trash.
Oh, okay.
You know?
So there you go.
Okay, so you can go ahead and respond to the question.
You can't get more masculine than taking out the trash.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I have a lot of strength and you know, I can deal with garbage and stuff like that. But then again, you know, I look like a what they call a lipstick lesbian or whatever, you know.
Okay.
But, actually, you know, it seems like the exact antithesis problem in the lesbian community is that if you look too masculine, then that's a problem. It's almost like femininity is valued, and the point of view is often that of lesbians that. If I wanted to date a guy, then I would date a guy.
Well, bowl me over.
So, and that seemed to be
it's the
where,
same thing,
where...
You know, I think it's universal. I mean, the idea to be with a man, for me, is that if I wanted to be with a woman, then I would be with a woman. If I want to be with a man, I want to be with a man. And ideally, I'm not necessarily looking for a female acting male.
Okay.
Right, and it all really kind of depends on... within the community, what you consider yourself to be, and I mean, you know, whatever, top, bottom, or blah, 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 like, within the lesbian community, it's the same thing as the butcher femme. I mean, if you consider yourself to be a femme, then you're looking for a butch, and that way, then you don't have a problem with a woman who is very masculine, you know?
Okay.
But if you're, you know, if you're a butch, then you're going to look at a woman who's very butch as being, like, kind of weird because you want somebody who's feminine, you know.
Why is that? Don't you think that Isn't that kind of a sad interpretation of homosexuality?
It's like it's like they're trying to mimic heterosexuality. And
it should be something totally different. Why does it have to be a derivative?
Well, I think, in my experience, in my relationships, and I've had more than one serious relationship, lesbian relationship, and what I noticed in the lesbian relationship was oftentimes, like I said, it was very mixed. I didn't pick my partner based on how masculine or feminine they were. Mm-hmm. I picked them based on their spirit or their personality and what mm-hmm. I was attracted mm-hmm. to in that way. And I think that's the way that it always maybe should be. And it was weird because she was more emotionally detached in a kind of like a masculine way, and mm-hmm. I was more, I guess, was hysterical, like, in a feminine way. But at the same time, when it came to, like, you know, dirty dishes and the trash and stuff, I had to take care of that kind of okay. thing, and then she wouldn't. So it is pretty complicated. And I definitely think that media, you know, contributes to our views of what male and female should be and what sexually is attractive. Oh. And it's kind of scary, but
I have a question for you. I'm gonna put you on the spot. What do you think about effeminate men? How do you view that? And what do you think about hypermasculine men?
Well, what I think is that a man who feels that they don't want to play the role of hyper-masculinity, what they do, it seems to me, is to compensate by being the extreme opposite of it.
Okay.
And so it's still polarities, whereas I believe that nobody is really one extreme or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I agree, Jennifer.
Yeah, one person might act hyper-masculine, and it's based on their fears. And then the other person acts, you know, hyper-feminine in a way, but still based on their fears and their reaction to the masculinity, you know. So, and a lot of lesbians are lesbians because they're reacting to hyper-masculinity in the heterosexual society, I think.
You've been wonderful. Thank you.
Wow.
You're welcome. But I love the show.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Hey, thank you.
Bye.
Anybody have a comment on Jennifer's last statement about the fear?
You know, I think fear is, that's a powerful statement. That's such a powerful statement that we really mold ourselves into the persons or the people that we are based on, you know, based on fear. In some ways, I mean, you know, society and our personal fears make us become certain things. And I think the result is that, you know, we're not always completely comfortable with ourselves, or it takes us a while to find ourselves. I mean, you know, you got to be 35 years old before it's okay, before you just accept and love yourself as you are on your own basis without any terms of society.
Well, I'm going to say this. I do believe that the younger generation, especially in the black community, they are knocking down some barriers and some doors. I had a lunch date on Thursday, and the young gentleman is 24 years old. Cute baby, cute.
Stop.
And we were in front of Houston's restaurant after we had had lunch, and he leaned over to kiss me, and it threw me because there were all these people standing in front of Houston's waiting to pick up their car, and I had all of these emotions running in. We can't do this in front of these people. I don't want them to see that. But what hit me all of a sudden was his boldness to break out of the norm. Because 10, 15, 20 years ago, that would not have happened. You would not have kissed.
That's an amazing statement. You know,
another. Which, let me finish, though, sweetie. Thank you. Within a span of 2 or 3 seconds, I made a decision. You know what? I'm going to kiss him back. I'm going to come out of my comfort zone. If he's willing, which I think he's always been out of, at least where my comfort zone was, that I'm going to come out after my... And nothing happened. Lightning didn't fall from, you know, strike us down. And it made me feel really good that I, too, own a piece of
this life of this world, and how dare I negate it by sitting back and not living a full, wonderful life and showing people that I'm not ashamed of who I love. And from now on, if he wants to hold hands in public, if he wants to skip down the street holding hands, I am going to do that now, because I'm going to take possession of my life and who I've chosen to love and my masculinity. I did this back and forth about, am I a 1 or a 10? I'm everything in between. Some days I'm a 12, 13, 14, and there are other days I'm below 0. Uh-huh. So I'm going to own all of that and take all of that because it is mine. So I'm not one more than the other. I think in my mind I wished for people to view me a certain way so they could have an opinion about me, but they're going to think what they think anyway. And somebody may see a 6 one day, and the same day somebody may see a 3 in my action. So I'm just going to live the whole gamut. And as Billy has so eloquently said, just be myself. Mm-hmm. And then I think once I start doing that, maybe it can become contagious and it'll start spreading out, and then everybody can be themselves, and then we won't even have this issue. Tyrone, you were saying what?
Well, I just believe that, you know, it's because we're so, we live in a society now that's putting these outside pressures to of our civil rights. I mean, I hate to be social political, but, you know, kissing someone in public is a social political statement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, expressing your love for another male in a public setting is a social political statement. You know, it used to be outlawed in Texas. And what's amazing is that, you know, and I'm not, I don't want to be the spokesperson for the movement. I don't want to be.
You don't want a banner?
I don't want a banner. I don't want to walk in the parade and scream and sing with heels on. That ain't me. You know, and I'm not wearing flats either.
Okay.
but I can tell you this. Anytime you decide, you as a society collectively decide that it is okay to hold back someone's civil liberties and their civil rights, I don't care if it's two mushrooms loving each other, it ain't right. Mm-hmm. And at some point, any society is going to revolt against that. The gay community, I mean, the fact that, you know, there shouldn't be a question about, you know, a gay male raising children. Ideally, if you're a good parent, you're a good parent. There are good parents that are heterosexual. There are good parents that are homosexual. There are good parents that raise great children. I know Larry's parents didn't raise him to be a homosexual, but he is. He was raised by heterosexual parents, and he was raised to become, and he is a homosexual now. So why, you know, logically would a homosexual be able to raise a heterosexual child? Ideally, sexuality should be the last thing involved.
Mm-hmm.
I want to raise it. As a parent or a prospective parent, I want to raise a child that loves themselves, that accepts themselves, and that loves society and contributes to society. Now, beyond that, you know, it's irrelevant. I'm not concerned about who they, you know, sexuality is such a personal mm-hmm. thing. I don't care what your sexuality is unless I'm having sex with you. Why should it be worn on your sleeves every day? Sexuality is so personal. Who cares? You know, at the end of the day, I want to know, are you a good person?
What is the defining moment that is necessary in order to for the entire black community to get off of the masculinity or the effeminate bandwagon and allow people to be who they are in their sexuality, but require of them a manhood or a womanhood or a humanhood where their integrity, their loyalty, their trustworthiness, their self-respect, their self-esteem, where that is more important than a falsely painted picture in order to satisfy this internal fear that we lose something when someone doesn't conform to what we think they should conform to as far as sexuality is concerned. What is it going to take for us as a whole? But we have to start in the black gay community first, and we have to stop all of this, because when people say no fat, no femme, and all that's internalized homophobia, it's internalized hate. What is it going to take for us to let that go and let people be? What's going to have to happen?
I think when we come to accept that there's gay people, heterosexual people, when we see enough people dying from HIV/AIDS and say, well, okay, these people may have had an alternate lifestyle or whatever, and had they not chose to live in fear,
mm-hmm.
and had we just accepted these individuals for who they were, who they are, and enjoyed them, and enjoyed them being the individuals that they were, and just enjoyed their lives, period, maybe, you know, we can come to terms with that.
Anybody else?
I take offense to you using, bring it up. I mean, HIV is one thing; it's a whole totally different issue. I take offense that the equating HIV with homosexuality. I take offense to that because HIV is a disease. It knows no sexuality. It knows no group of people. HIV kills heterosexual people, and we know this in society as well as homosexual people. It kills people who don't make good sexual decisions, and I take offense personal offense by saying that, by equating HIV with this whole gay issue. Yes, it's a topic. Yes, it's an issue. But there's much more to HIV than gayness. Oh, I mean, our society continuously proves that every day. You can go see the little babies that are dying of HIV now in Africa and to prove that.
I think what Billy was talking about, he wasn't equating homosexuality HIV. Directly. He was talking about the fear that people experience because they are homosexual that leads them into behavior that causes them to become HIV. So it's not the homosexuality that does it. It's the activity that they partake
bad
in
decisions.
Based on
bad
sexual
decisions
that they make.
Right. Heterosexual
based on,
or homosexual.
On the fear that they have. But we're specifically speaking about homosexuals within the black gay community.
But then you have the heterosexual black community that believes that HIV has seeped into the heterosexual
because
of the homosexual
and that's ignorance.
Community. That is ignorant, and it's perpetuated every day. And now in the media, they're also perpetuating this HIV epidemic in the African American community and stuff. So this message is being sent all over the world. So now you walking down the street as an African American, and you don't know how people are viewing you. Are people out there thinking that every African American walking around here is HIV positive or with AIDS?
No, of course not. No.
But I believe that, you know,
Chris, I think you misinterpreted what I was saying.
Okay, if I misinterpreted it, I'm sorry. But I also believe that, you know, anytime we bring this topic up in a platform that is gay and inevitably has to lead to a discussion on HIV, that we are perpetuating media stereotypical beliefs, and I believe it's unhealthy. I believe it's absolutely unhealthy. It's, you know, what's great about Brokeback Mountain was, for me, that it was a movie that did not have to deal with HIV. You know what? I don't want to wear the banner of HIV every day. I'd like to be able to live a life of love and happiness and goodness without dealing with this issue. Gayness does not equate HIV and AIDS. Does not equate it. And I'm in popular culture, I am sick and tired of that being the equation.
I'm going to say one more time, Billy, that's not what you were saying.
That's not what I was
talking about. The fear.
You understood.
You mentioned the fear, which causes behavior, which results in. So, any last comments on masculinity, manhood from the panel? I'm going to say, since nobody has nothing to say.
You have something to say, Tyrone?
I will say it, Tyrone.
He should have plenty to say.
Okay. You know what? I have a dream in the wake of Dr. King's holiday that one day we will wake up in this country and we will be able to accept and love people on their own terms without all of these barriers of masculinity, these hyper walls, these facades that we place on each other, that we accept people for whatever their interpretation of their sexuality is, and that we judge people based on the goodness in their heart, not this facade.
The moral character. Their integrity.
Okay.
Their spirituality. and them just being themselves.
Anybody else? My last word is that I encourage you to live a life that you are proud of, that you be who you are, and that that resonates with other people, and that it becomes contagious. That being yourself is more than just something that we say, but it's something that we walk and that we do. And when we do it, the people around us will see it, and then they'll begin to do it. And that will be it for us. Please join us next month on February the 18th. I'm sorry, February 17th. Or is it February 18th? We're going into Saturday, so it'll be February 18th.
We usually say the Friday / Saturday, so.
Okay, Friday / Saturday. 1:30 in the morning.
Thank you, Chris, for having me on.
Oh, I thank each and every one of you, Larry, Billy, Tyrone. It's been wonderful. I hope to have you all back. I'll make you come back if I have to hog tie you.
That's another segment we have.
That's right. Thank you, I'm not into that. I want to make that known.
Our leather line segment's next week where we do.
All right. But please join us. And again, this has been Black on Black on 90.1 KPFT, the radio station that listens to you. I want to thank you for joining in and listening in. If you have any questions or comments or want to email me directly, please email me at millionaireintraining@yahoo.com. That's millionaireintraining@yahoo.com. Thank you.
Welcome to the colored section. Welcome to the Negro League. Sign your name on the blacklist and know this, it's American history. See what it is to be blackmailed.
Blackmailed.
See a real life. Sign your name on a blacklist and know this, it's American history.
That was Whitney McCray, and the song was Hollow.
Ah, yes. Local woman, Whitney McCray. And we've almost got her on the show one time.
Close only counts on horseshoes, hand grenades, and nuclear weaponry.
I know, but we'll get her one of these days. We've got a brand new segment.
And they've got intro music.
Oh. Well, I want to say something first. It's a segment I've been wanting to do for quite a while, and finally found the two people to head it up. Now, the segment doesn't have a title quite yet, and if we wait for Merlin and David to agree on something, I don't think it's ever going to get one.
We agree on lots of things.
That's true. It's amazing.
Isn't this just the poetry segment right now?
Well,
you know.
Actually, Chris, don't worry about the music. Play this outro now, since we're already kind of into it.
I kind of blew it, huh?
No.
Oh, well, I mean, it's not the first time you blew it, right?
Hey. This is very fluid show.
So have you guys really decided on the title, or?
No, I was thinking about that today. That I was like, you know, we never actually came up with a title, and Poetry Show is a little bit sort of...
The Poetry Corner is right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, but we'll brainstorm, and by next month we will have something interesting to...
Okay.
So I guess I was going to start off the show by explaining a little bit of what the format we're thinking about having, or probably going to have. And that was, I had originally had this idea that there was a lot of poets and artists and different cultural people from the gay past that were kind of becoming unknown. By some of the younger people, and that as an older gay man, that part of my responsibility is to make sure that all that heritage gets passed down. And so I was going to do it. I'm going to do a thing of having a little historical snapshot bio of someone who is inspiring. Maybe if they're a poet, read a little bit of their work, and just a kind of a little history lesson to start, but not a boring one, hopefully. So, yeah, and also you find a lot of times that the first people who were really out and sort of outrageous were a lot of times the poets and the artists and everything, because they sort of didn't really have anything to lose, so they just got out there and spread the word about what. Absolutely. Many choices you had in life.
Ginsberg being the most prominent, at least from the Beat generation.
Yeah, but it goes back much further.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, while we're starting this out, maybe you'd like to introduce your guests.
Yes. Yeah, so okay. And my co-host is the famous and resident, provocateur of After Hours in general, is Bobby, better known as Merlin. Okay. And I'm honored to have him as my co-host.
Hey, how you doing? It's or we could just call me what Sir John calls me all the time.
What's
the
that?
Wandering mendicant sage of Monaco.
That's true.
It makes me feel about 150, but, anyhow.
Merlin knows everyone.
Yeah, I know everyone. I know everyone. Anybody I don't know are just friends I haven't made yet. That's pretty
exactly.
much my principle in life.
There you go.
And...
I'm Jose. I've been on this show in various capacities, mostly on the round table, but it's my first time doing the poetry segment here, so
let's
see how this runs.
And then the guest that I invited is a friend of mine named Dominguez, the infamous Dominguez. And he's an incredible poet. I saw him perform before I ever knew him, and I was just completely knocked out. I thought he was one of the best people I'd ever heard. And then I started hearing stories and rumors about him from friends. And
do tell.
It was like, oh, you missed the other night. Dominguez got naked and did a backflip on stage. And I was like, I did miss
God.
Something.
Does he know about how we do nude radio here?
Yeah, we do occasionally do nude radio, And he is...
he's not kidding.
And I have to say, it's a gay poetry show, but the whole show says gay people and all the letter alphabet things, mm-hmm. and friends. So he's our token straight guy tonight.
The token straight guy.
Well, I think poetry transcends
absolutely.
Sexuality.
So that's the whole point, I think.
Well, so does he. I mean, anybody who will walk around on a normal night at Helios with their scrotum hanging out of their fly, you know, is generally a friendly person.
Generally.
Well, you know,
either that or is just looking for somebody to teabag.
Well, there you go. You never can tell.
You gotta let the boys air out once in a while, I guess.
But anyway, Dominguez, so, yes. You know, maybe tell us, I mean, you do a lot of performing and you teach at prison, so maybe tell us a little bit about
that. I teach at Houston. I've got a master's in philosophy, whatever that means. I mean, I'm not master in just BSing. But I teach at Houston Community College and in the prison system through Alvin Community College and TDCJ, and that's just really amazing. You know, I was kind of joking out with David before the show, you know, just looking at these cats that are in here at KPFT this late, you know, and I'm like, I mean, this is great, man. I'm with the outcast society, man. This is awesome.
The in crowd of the out crowd.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And then going to work with these guys, many of them who are absolutely brilliant, you know, in this context of the prison walls and teaching philosophy and Plato and Nietzsche and all this.
Well, part of this program for years has been prisoners writing in letters.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that's a big part
Hill,
of
yeah.
our show. So our that's an overlap right there.
My,
it's
a big part of our show.
I love my MBBs, my men behind bars.
There we go.
We
have
you get some fabulous artwork from that.
Oh, yeah, for a letter.
Yeah, every semester I get, because usually a couple of them work in a craft shop, and I'll contract out something, or they'll make me some. I got this nice handmade leather bag.
Ooh.
With, like, a picture of Nietzsche on the side of it.
Wow.
It's
wow.
Needless to say, he got an A.
That's great. I asked him permission if I could tell this other story. I have to tell one more story before we get started. And that was, he went to Texas A&M, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And another friend of, another very gorgeous mutual friend of ours named Scott Covan, who's also a fine poet, was telling the story about how in the old days he would do stuff like they'd go in a redneck bar in College Station. He would go in the bathroom, take off every stitch of his clothes, and fold them neatly, and then walk out holding them. And they had to run. They had to run.
Actually,
from
the funny thing, we didn't, because they were so freaked out. The bouncer actually opened the door and, like, kind of curtsied. And it was
just, this at the chicken?
Close enough. It was.
So you got respect. Good.
The chicken would be the kind of golden apple. That'd take some scrotum, as you mentioned earlier, to do that.
There we go. Well, this is a poetry show, and since I'm not doing a historical thing of a famous poet, I'm going to tell a little story and read you a poem by an old friend of mine. And if I can find the poem now. So what happened was, I went to art school in 1971 in Massachusetts, and the summer before I had this perfect hippie summer in Austin. And I had a friend who sold sandwiches on the drag there on Guadalupe. And I would hang out and talk to her, and there were interesting men that would come by, and occasionally she'd say, you know, I feel like I'm running a dating service for you. And, so anyway, one day I was out there and I went into the bookstore, which was right there, the UT store, and there was this really nice looking blonde guy, and we kind of talked, and then he came out for his break, and we went and had ice cream together, and then I was still talking to her when he got off work, just sort of by accident, and so he said, well, you want to come over to my house? So I did. And that was gay liberation times, and I made it a big point of saying, well, if we're going to be friends, you should know that I'm gay, and if you have a problem with that, then we can't be friends. And so I said that to him, and he said, well, I've kind of thought about that myself, and I've never really talked to anybody about it or done anything about it. And I went, well, I'm here anytime you want to talk or whatever. So I got, you could hear a pin drop, and so I leaned over and kissed him, and he said, I'll lock the door. So we started this wonderful affair, and we were in bed that day, and his roommate who was moving out came to pick up stuff, and I had to stand in the shower quietly while he was getting his stuff. And we carried on this wonderful affair that was really beautiful. And there was one time we were making love, and I was reassuring him. He goes, no, it's fine now. So when I went away to art school, He had given me this ring that had two lions on it, sort of facing opposite directions with a turquoise in it. And when I was going off to art school, he gave me this. Two lions. A lion on the prowl grew hot and tired and sought solace in a cave. He'd never been there before, but it had a familiar smell. It was a good place to rest, undisturbed. Undisturbed rushed into disturbed. Sounds from the dark within the cave caused the lion to turn his great mane, and his eyes met an inviting glance. Two eyes issued a welcome so enticing as if the host had been awaiting his arrival. Two lions in a cave, why hadn't they crossed paths before, or had they? They conversed so meaningfully with their eyes and then their paws, and their tasseled manes became entangled. They violently struggled to please each other. Two lions, side by side, yet neither lost his honor. Neither tried to overrule, for after all, a lion is a lion, and he shouldn't be any less a lion or any more a lion. With this in mind, their admiration grew for each other, and they strive to become more entangled. A lion on the prowl had grown hot and tired. Now he'd found relief. But relief is only momentary for a lion, and the prowl must continue. The cave and its host would be a pleasant memory during the prowl, and the host returns to the blackness of his solitary cave, kindling a fire with thoughts of his visitor. Separately, they shared the same thought, the time their tasseled manes could once again become entangled. So he gave me that, and I went away to art school, and we lost touch with each other for years. And then I came back to Texas in the 90s, and I saw a thing in The Voice that said, Stephen Hawley, if anybody knows who Stephen Hawley, he has wandered away from his family's home, and he has dementia, and he's in the last stages of AIDS. So I called the number, and sure enough, it was Stephen. And I explained who I was, and his brother told me that after the rest of the story was that he had gone to L.A., become a really successful designer, had gone to Europe, lived in Spain for a while, and really had a wonderful life. And in the end of the story is that they finally found him in a patch of woods near their house, and he had left the house in the middle of the night and just went and sat down under a tree and left his body, which I think is kind of a nice ending to the story. So, okay, there's that. Dominguez, you want
to? I wouldn't want to have to follow that act.
Oh, wait till you hear Dominguez.
So what am I doing? You want me to do a poem?
Yeah, do a poem. All right, whatever you want.
All right, this is a little riff on a Dylan tune. Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown. And accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your life to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. Cause the times, they are a-changing. The times, they are a-changing. Changing so fast, in fact, there's no time to digest anything. Everything moving at the speed of E, no stability, yet we all think that we're free because we have choices. 800 channels on the TV, 400 deodorants manufactured just for me. Well, I must be free. So many choices, Milky Way, galaxy of choices, so many voices, Tower of Babel voices, cacophony of monologues, no dialogue, society of big fat hogs stuffing their face with cash and Big Macs, unwilling to heed the consequences of ingesting such things because there's always some Atkins to save the day, some diet du jour that guarantees those successive pounds will be shed. The enemy is carbohydrates, which is a subtle way of saying energy is the enemy. Energy is the enemy. Energy is the enemy? No, energy is not my enemy. Energy is that which sets me free and allows me to float on this tumultuous sea of these times that are changing. Come, mothers and fathers throughout the land, and don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old road is rapidly aging, so please get out of the new one if you can't give a hand. Cause the times, they are changing. The Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. Times when our technology comes to us in technicolor, yet we still think in black and white. Times when
Even our children's dolls are getting a divorce. Times when Orwellian doublespeak is the main mode of discourse. Times where people affirm that God is love. So long as love doesn't equal two penises or two pussies. Times when of ascetic anorexia, spiritual suffocation, and homogenization of humanity. Ascetic anorexia, spiritual suffocation, homogenization of humanity. Times where everything and everyone is acting like a dime, a dozen. No, I am not a dime, a dozen. I'm more like a champagne cork discarded into the sea because it is seen as unnecessary trash from some aristocrat celebration. But we have much to learn from that cork, and I strive to be so free and happily float on whatever waters are presented to me in this tumultuous sea of these times that are changing. Come, senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't block up the hall. For he who gets hurt will be he who is stole. There's a battle outside and it's raging. It'll soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. Cause the times, they are a-changing.
All right. Thanks.
My God. Good. I was just a few years younger than you when that song was written.
There you go. Yeah.
I am very impressed.
Cool. Well, man, I'm recovering from some allergies, so I apologize to all you vocalists out there.
No
scratchiness, but
that was beautiful.
That's part of 2:30 in the morning.
I've seen him perform with no mic, and you can hear him in every part of the room.
Thank you for bringing that song into the new century.
Yeah, you got to redefine it, because that's the whole point of the whole song, right? His times are not just changing. And now they're always changing.
Always.
Absolutely. Well, Jose.
I'm going to read this poem, 15 Souls. I just wrote this. A bit of a catharsis for me. A little something that happened back in March. You may have heard about it. What is the sound of 15 souls being taken? Is it the sonic boom, God's voice calling them home? Is it the ensuing rush of air, the collective breath, leaving their bodies all at once? Or maybe that white plume atop the mushroom cloud is 15 souls being lifted to heaven. Safety was a four-letter word in a five-star company. Profit, losses, and earnings spoke louder, so they meant more. But safety spoke volumes in violations, fines, and accidents. It would take 15 souls to make a point. My sense of place, my sense of home, was shattered on a mild March afternoon. But nothing compared to those lives shattered and splintered by tragedy. I can never go home again. The memory is too painful. Those images burn into my mind of watching another fire burn, of waiting to know what went wrong, of wondering, will this vicious cycle ever end? What is the sound of 15 souls being taken? Is it the helicopters airlifting broken bodies? Or is it the anguished cry of anxious loved ones waiting for good or bad news? Or is it the cry of a child who senses the separation from someone they love?
Beautiful. I mean, there's just too many places on the planet right now where that's people's everyday reality. You know, it's boy, this is definitely, this particular session is not going to be not love poems, evidently. No soppy romantic.
No,
we will at some point have some, I'm sure.
Love poems, we don't need
but tonight,
love poems.
Tonight there are other things to talk about, it seems like.
I need to jump in here and remind people that they are listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude.
Yes.
Right here on good old listener-supported Pacifica Station, KPFT Houston, and KPFT Galveston at 89.5 FM.
And bless it. So,
I guess that means it's my turn.
I think it does.
And whenever I do this, I just feel like I always have to do this one because it was my first. And it's, you know, nearest and dearest to my heart. Those who are regular listeners have heard it before. But,
it's good to start at the beginning.
And
this is the beginning.
This is the beginning, and it's called Who Am I? Who am I? What's my game? Who am I? Give me a name. Am I the child born into pain? The one they called crippled, stupid, insane? Perhaps I'm the boy who dreamed of things, of unicorns, wizards, and fairies with wings. Or I might be the one they called faggot and queer, a teenage freak living in fear. Who am I? I've asked each day as from the mirror I turn away. Am I the person others admire, smiling man in gypsy attire? That guy with the Walkman seen all over town, but rarely with both feet on the ground. I don't know if that guy is real. Some days I don't know how to feel. Am I a man or am I the boy playing with life, still searching for toys? Who am I? Can you say which one stands here today? Then again, I might be just a scared runner, hunted by the AIDS gunner. The one they call HIV wants the bounty for shooting me. 10 years now he's been after my hide. Each one passes and he's still denied. He knows the field and he keeps up the chase. It may be his track, but it's still my race. I know who I'm not. I'm no longer the fool who let a lover treat him so cruel. Black eyes and a broken nose were the truth behind my public pose. So who is this that you spy? What's my name? Who am I? I'm called by many names, you see. Which of these is truly me? Merlin, Thumper, Cripple, Queer? Which is the one standing here? In the end, all and just one, whom some embrace and others will shun. My name's Bobby, and I really couldn't be anything more or less than me.
All right.
Wonderful.
It's always good. Amazing. Every time.
Every time I hear it, there's a change in years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There.
Hallelujah.
And I and this is my original copy, so this still says from the first year that mm-hmm. I wrote this, and that was when it had been only 4 years.
Yeah.
The original date on that is only 4 years that I'd been positive. Okay. And I am, in a manner of a few months, coming up on 11.
Dang!
Wow.
Hooray.
And I'm still here.
Yes.
So anyhow.
And feisty as ever. Well, I'm going to read another one by someone else. This is by a poet who's been on Living Art and read poetry and is, again, a friend of Dominguez and I. He was just mentioning him earlier. His name is Alex Wookman, and he's had to struggle with a not-so-fun past, as a lot of us have, and it's been real interesting to watch him come to his own in a lot of ways, and it's really great that he has. Anyway, and this poem is part of his process with all that. There's not a title here, so. Dear Dad, I have to say this now because you might listen. Dear Dad, I've tried and tried to talk to you about my life, about the world. I don't know if I can do it anymore. I don't know if I can sit across the little plastic table from you, look into your face, a face covered in battle scars from your war with addiction, see you laughing about good times, and hear you say everything's fine while an armed guard walks by and says you've got 45 minutes left. Dear Dad, why do you want to drink yourself to death? Dear Dad, I remember you saying that anything worth doing is going to be difficult. Life is difficult. Is that worth doing? Dear Dad, I love you. Please stop. Dear Dad, I was always afraid you'd leave and never come back. Now, I'm not so sure I want to see you when you do get back. I'm not sure I'll be here when you get back. Dear Dad, why didn't you ever call Andrew and leave 30-minute messages calling him a faggoty-ass, limp-wristed, speed-addicted, bleep-sucking poet? Why didn't you ever call Matt at 3, 4, and 5, and 6 in the morning after a week-long bender and go, ooh, you're an artist, ooh, look at the effing artist? Why didn't you threaten to come over to Andrew's apartment and kick his door down and trash everything he owns because he wouldn't rush right over with $20 before the liquor stores close? Dear Dad, is it normal to spend your 20s coming up with reasons not to kill yourself? The one I'm trying out this week is that I have too much to do. Dear Dad, it's 8 now. My roommate is making love in the next room. I hear the girls moan over the reggae music. I don't know why I mentioned that. It's not really important. Dear Dad, I did 6 shows this month. three this week alone. I have two newspapers that want to publish my stuff. I was on the radio too, show radio too. Why do I feel so empty? Dear Dad, I've forgotten happiness. Dear Dad, I don't know where these roads we walk lead. I think they go nowhere.
Mm. Wow.
Well, I'm glad to say that was a while back. He's actually more cheerful and spunky these days.
He's got a girlfriend, I swear.
Yeah, well, there you go. A significant other always helps. Yes.
That'll do it.
In some variety, yes.
Dominguez.
Okay. Actually, in a weird way, though, this one's going to be kind of comical. It connects to, like, the theme of childhood.
We could lighten up a little bit, I think.
Well, I mean, I'll tell that story I was telling you earlier briefly. Because,
cool, yeah.
You know, I grew up kind of in the, I guess you would say, in crowd. You know, I was a jock and played football and all this stuff. And but luckily, I had a mother who was absolutely amazing. And, you know, there was none of that arrogance or, you know, whatever. But anyways, I went home this weekend to be with my old high school buddy. Someone got pregnant or something, I don't know. It was something he had to buy something for that they were registered at. But anyway, so we were there, and somehow it came up, the movie Brokeback Mountain came up, and they were like, you know, oh, you know, making all these, you know, gay jokes and all this stuff. And actually turning the word broke back into a pejorative adjective already, you know, oh, that's so broke back. And, you know, and I was like, you know, have you seen it? And they're like, no, have you seen it? I was like, yeah, actually, I've seen it twice. It's a pretty darn good movie. Well, 15 minutes later, they were, you know, talking about high school pranks they did to people. And one of the ones that we did was, you know, if one of the guys was passed out, he was the last one to wake up in the morning, we'd pull our penises out and stand over his sleeping head and, like, jam something like a hot dog or a pickle in his mouth. So, like, when he wakes up, you know, there we are, like, exposed, and he doesn't know what's going on. And so we were laughing.
My gosh.
So, I mean, you can visualize it, right? Okay, so.
Yeah. There's nothing more homoerotic than straight buddies partying together, I tell you.
Exactly. And so this one guy wouldn't wake up, and we kept just ramming this hot dog, and so we just got tired of it, so we put it down his pants. And so everyone was laughing about that. And so I go back and I say, guys, don't you see what's going on here? You're sitting here laughing about sticking a hot dog in someone's butt crack, but you won't go see Brokeback Mountain.
And there's something funny here. Yeah.
It amazes me the doublethink and the dissonance that they can hold without even, like, really reflecting on it. So this poem was inspired by one of such friends who came and visited me, and he's really a good guy, but, you know, I'm, you know, like, living in the troughs, you know.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Right, it's really just beautiful, you know, wonderful, scary sometimes, but it was just amazing. And he came, and he just didn't know what to think. So I wrote this poem after him, and I'll do it in character, in urban cowboy character here.
Oh, good, so, good.
This is called Suburban Willie. Suburban Willie, he came to the city and he didn't know how to talk. Though we grew up together, two birds of a feather, in very different ways we walk. He held his head high, nose straight to the sky, acting as if we were all diatom. To him it was dirty. He was sleepy by 9:30, his circadian rhythms in sync with sitcoms. And the people he saw made him drop his jaw, the homeless, heartbroken and such. I looked at him and said, buddy, you spend all your time in bed, you clearly don't get out that much. Because his reality is formed by TV. What he sees on the tube is the truth. I can't help but sympathize. He believes all those lies. I understand why he thinks I'm uncouth. Because if that's your paradigm, the one they show you on prime time, then to you, I'm definitely ugly. But that's okay with me if I don't fit neatly into your preconditioned ideas of beauty. Because out there in the burbs, they all speak the same words, homogenized as a carton of milk. And the way that they dress, to me, is such a mess. Name brand purses and shirts made of silk. In manufactured homes you could topple with a stone. Their communities are surrounded by fences. 2.3 kids, a dog, and a boat, and numb in all of their senses.
Yeehaw.
On Sundays they go to church, don't you know, because the Lord is their only salvation. But these churches are looking more like sports arenas than before. Jesus via satellite across the nation. And the rest of their week, well, they hardly speak. Too busy shopping at Walmart and Mickey D's, and their family time is nickel and dime. They just hop into their SUVs and watch DVDs. But
But down here in the streets, the people I meet aren't exactly what you call genteel, but I'll take that any day over a venti latte, because I know their soul is for real. Well, Suburban Willie, he came to the city and he didn't like what he see, because inside the city it might not be that pretty, but at least the people here are free.
All right.
Very
all right.
Good.
There
oh
you
my
go.
God.
Yeah. I remember one time, I don't go every summer now, but there was a decade where every summer I went up to South Dakota and sort of got to where I kind of like Kansas and Nebraska. There's a lot of beautiful places there. But I remember coming back from one of those trips, been up on the reservation, Lakota Reservation, for a couple of weeks, you know, about a month-long trip, and I'm standing there in the front of the porch of Helios, and there are the transsexual ladies of the night. And I was like, it's good to be back home, back in the city, back in the loop, back on the trolls. Yeah. So, yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
So,
yeah.
Who's...
Jose,
something else? And y'all are asking for trouble now.
Oh, good.
Apocalypse Now is the name of this one. Sheep go to the slaughter, unaware of their fate. That's the price they pay when they keep up with the Joneses. Sacrifice everything to have nothing. And for what? A moment of recognition? For the sake of one-upmanship? To fill up your life with everything, only to feel empty in the end? Join the pop evolution. Today's star is yesterday's news. Punks die young. Rock stars grow fat and old, become parodies of themselves. Where are they now? On the Recovery Channel, hidden behind the music that no one really cares about anymore. The cat that couldn't hear was our savior from a bad air supply. That is, until everyone sounded like them, too. Street poets rapped about the hood in the streets and then bling bling to have a mansion and a Rolls and only to leave their hood and their streets the way they left it. Does it really have to be all about the Benjamins? Let the old man raid the piggy bank while their employees line up for the poorhouse. Go ahead and handcuff them. Make them do the perp walk. They get off on that. Rob from the poor, give to the rich. Let the bear run wild while the bull lay dying. 9/11 was our 911 wake up call, but no one woke up. Wave the flag, show some patriotic spirit, then when no one's looking, put the flag away. We let it happen to us, no matter how many fingers we point. Too much pride burst the bubble. Parents don't parent. Their babysitters are soccer, football, and ballet. Keep the kids busy to keep them out of the way. Out of sight, out of mind, right? Teachers can't teach. Lawyers and lawsuits lurk in the shadows. Sure, Ritalin keeps the kids focused, but what has Johnny really learned? How can our teachers teach when it's all about tests? One to get them out of school, one to get them into college. We too will go to our slaughter, but only if we stay the course.
Hey, very good.
Thanks.
Well, I do have to make an exception, though. Just because... It's amazing. There are people from the 60s and 70s and 80s who you really thought would never do anything decent again, and all of a sudden they're doing good stuff. I personally really love the Rolling Stones in the day. I mean, you know, there was a sort of wonderful kind of decadent... let's have fun thing that the Rolling Stones used to do perfectly. And anyway, and my brother got a Bigger Bang, their new thing, and it's amazing.
Oh, I...
It's amazing. And I used to always say that Mick Jagger was living proof that Jim Morrison did the right thing. that's how disappointed I was. But evidently what happened is Charlie Watts, the drummer, almost died, and they got together. They, for years in the interviews, they had said that they'd bring parts of songs already written and put them together in the studio. For the first time since that time, Jagger and Richards got together in a room together and wrote songs. And every time I put on the CD to listen to it, I'm standing here going, I don't believe I'm listening to the Rolling Stones' latest album and loving it. So that's my one little exception to your...
It was just a reaction to everything in the media, everything that was going on.
Oh, sure.
It's like, you know, everything just, you know, was a reaction to... This was a reaction to everything that I saw. You know, And it just, you know, I had to write it. It was very cathartic when I read it.
It's wonderful, yeah.
You know, and it's very cathartic, you know, reading it.
Sometimes you just got to go off.
Yes.
And it's true. Punks die young, and, you know, rock stars grow fat and old. Go figure.
Most of them do, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Look at Joe Strummer or Joey Ramone.
Oh, well, you know, my prime example is Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I cringe at the idea that I actually like them. I mean, they looked like
Mick
sort
Jagger
of dentist on vacation.
He's gotten scrawnier and scrawnier and scrawnier and uglier and uglier and uglier.
But who they emulated at the beginning of the career were all these old Delta Blues cats and all these old blue cats who were scrawny and scratchy voiced and all that. So, hey, they're finally getting to the right age to not pretend to be. They are.
I was getting fed up with, you know, this whole, you know, hip-hop and everything.
Oh, sure.
You know,
sure.
It's like, but wasn't it, that's not where hip-hop started.
Well, and music by committee. This, let's do a survey of what the people want and then produce music.
That's why a lot of the blues.
And it doesn't matter whether they can sing or not. Let's just sort of jiggle some knobs and get them on key and, you know.
To paraphrase, the goddess so loved the world, she didn't send a committee.
There you go. There you go.
Okay.
So Mr. Baba. Oh.
So, along the lines of there was the dad poem for you, I have one about my mother.
Ah.
And my mother and I had what could be called a contentious relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Armageddon?
I called her a queen bee on several occasions. A raving bitch on many occasions. And when she died, there was a whole lot of no resolution to what went on between us, so I had to find some for myself. And this is how that occurred. It's called Inner Child Questions Iron Woman. And, Iron Woman, to many, you were the infallible physician, bringer of life and health, modern day Dr. Quinn. Few aware of the truth in the white lab coat. At what moment did you become so very human? What event made you so like the rest of us? The loss of two so young? A son's sexuality? Your own failing health? Your addiction? The syringe full of the drug that allowed you to walk gave you the power to tread carelessly upon your youngest child's feelings. He needed you to validate him, to love him. Unconditional was reserved for your office. Any hour with the ring of a phone, a parent's fear quickly allayed with knowledge and understanding. Comforts denied to the teenager struggling with his identity. The flame of your red hair, like the inferno of anger and hatred raging in that young man's soul. Was acceptance too much to give? A simple, I love you as you are. Would have done so very much. Then one day you were gone. No resolution, no understanding, loose ends left untied. Time passes, the boy becomes a man left to his search alone. He still wants love, wants answers. Medicine woman, iron heart, the inner child, your child, inside a grown man, wants you to know he has found the unconditional love he sought. It's in the eyes looking back at him in his bathroom mirror.
Wow.
Very nice. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. And it's just, she and I, from the moment any reference to my sexual orientation, just went at it and at it and at it, and then she acted like it didn't exist.
Yeah, that's a lot of people's solution, a lot of parents' solution.
Like, yeah, I mean, my father handled it beautifully, and then my mother just, if it didn't fit into her neat little picture, it didn't exist.
Right.
And then she literally forgot it, because during the last year of her life, she went from being a functioning pediatrician to being someone who couldn't remember my name.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Couldn't remember that her youngest and her oldest son don't have any children, but kept referencing Gene's kids, you know.
Right.
Things like that.
And it was kind of hard because it was like we had never settled this thing. We had never, you know, look, this is how it is, you know. Right. And we never got to that. We never got to do that. Anyhow.
Well, I'm going to read one that I wrote. That I wrote sort of right before Katrina and maybe a little bit afterwards. Actually, I'm going to read two. One's very, very short. It's kind of a postscript because it goes with it. Okay. The grief doesn't just run deep. It runs all the way through. It's not just the love lost in Vietnam when I was young. It's not just my dear departed grandmother's widowed before I was born. It's not just because I had to become a liar in high school because of my sexuality. It's not as narrow as my own concerns. It's not as seemingly self-servingly complicated as my own projections. It's not as absurdly primitive as my rejections by and of. It's not limited to my own sense of loss, my actual losses. The color of the sky is always compromised now by what is in it that you can see, that we breathe, that poisons us, that we ignore. This is the grief of a dying planet. It connects integrally with how little it takes for us to begin to abuse each other, how easy it is to justify why and continue when there really is no excuse at all, whatever ingrained mechanics explain it all. Each bit of damage done is done and takes its toll. It's not as self-obsessed as human loss. It connects to how we condition ourselves to not know where we are or what we're doing, to only consider what's in it for us. It all connects up all the way through. It connects us, me to you, and us to everyone else. The functioning respect and compassion. The grief doesn't just run deep, it runs all the way through. Mm. And then a little postscript. And I wrote the first part of this poem, all the questions, and I was going, God, where am I going to go with this poem? So, who fills graveyards with skulls? Who leaves hearts to be turned to ash? Who leaves the corpse to rot where it falls? All of us, each of us, one way or the other, all the same. Mm. Cheery.
Cheerful little piece.
So, Dominguez.
It kind of ties in with that theme of, you know, coming back around full circle and returning to the earth. So I'll do one more, I guess.
If you have to wait for the music to start before you begin to write, then the page is gonna stay blank. The beat is already there. A pounding internal drum without which there would be no life. Yeah, you would not be without the beat. A-pum-pum. Pumping sweet poem nectar in. A-pum-pum. Receiving the poem that it sent. A-pum-pum. Bathing the organs in a rejuvenating bhakta. A-pum-pum. Every 7 years you are completely new. Your very existence is the song, so what exactly are you waiting on? Action is the seed that grows long, exhale, pure logos. Sprouting, mango, melodies and lemon lyrics, swapping, dropping, seeding, sprouting, blooming, rotting, dropping, seeding, sprouting, blooming, rotting, dropping, seeding, sprouting, blooming. Nourishing, but not dying to nourish, being redefined, sacrificed, melting into something bigger, willingly, because you know there is something bigger. See, Socrates, Buddha, Christ, raw mangoes I eat for breakfast. I too willingly offer my soul as breakfast, my words as vitamins and minerals that appear on food labels necessary for a balanced diet. Each poem fulfills 100% recommended daily allowance. All the A, C, D, E, K, all the B's, thiamine, riboflavin, niacin, biotin, calcium, iron, phosphorus, magnesium, zinc, think. Serving size, one poem. Protein, poetics, carbohydrate, aesthetics, mineral, metaphors, visceral, vitamin, verbs, nourishing, dying to nourish, but not dying, being redefined, sacrificed, melting into something bigger, willingly because you know there is something bigger. Reseeding the earth from which they sprout, in the beginning there was only the word. The audible fruit of expression, a fruit that comes from the seed but is also the seed, an orange that grows out of itself and back into itself to create itself. Let your words do just the same, that is, grow back into you and thus create you, like mangled bodhisattva branches that have descended from their lofty heights to re-root into the earth. Yes, I am an oak whose branches have returned to the ground, returned to the root, because if you hang around long enough, you can't help but bow down to that root and connect, making the beginning and the end indistinguishable. See, that's what that little space is between a finger of Adam and a finger of God. It's the branch about to meet the root about to meet the branch, a tree that's come full circle, a seed that sprouts in both directions, foregoing its identity to become oak, elm, pine, mango, lemon, lime, space, time, soul, body, mind. Creation is nothing more than the completion of a circle. My life begins with an exhale.
Yeah.
Good, good.
Very beautiful. Well, we're kind of getting close to the end of the hour. Did Jose and Bobby read one more piece, and then we kind of start wrapping up. And one thing I want to mention as we're moving along, too, is I don't really know the address off the top of my head or email or whatever, but people out there who are interested in having their poems on the show and possibly be on can contact us through the show at the station. Chris can probably give us the information.
Yeah, you can send it to After Hours, care of KPFT, 90.1 FM. That's 419 Lovett Boulevard, LOVETT. Houston, Texas, 77006.
Thank you, Chris.
I've lost my mind there for a moment.
So what's new?
Yeah.
Insanity is a prerequisite for this show.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's insane people here.
To send it by email, you can send it to afterhours@kpft.org.
Yeah, and maybe if you want to give your email address or a phone number so we can talk to you, or I can talk to you, Bobby, or I can talk to you. And because I know that there are a lot of wonderful poets out there who are completely unknown, maybe never read their poems publicly, and we want... This is a community show and a community radio station, so it'd be interesting to see what's out there. So don't be shy. Send something in. So, Jose.
This one is one of those things that just grated on my nerves and I had to write this. It's called X Doesn't Mark the Spot. Generation X is a band Billy Idol played in. It isn't a label for my generation. We survived Cola Wars, Reaganomics, the Challenger disaster, bad hair, bad attitudes, and the age of excess. X marks the files the government can't explain. X is the new pet name our parents call each other. X was what Malcolm wanted to be called. X is what I'd like people to stop calling my generation. X is a variable. It doesn't mean a thing. So what does that say about my generation?
Hmm. Got that off your chest.
Yeah,
pretty
got that
well.
Off.
Yeah.
There you go. Now I can sleep 4 hours.
There you go.
I have an interesting thing here because I have two that I would like to finish with because they're connected to each other. They're very intimately connected with each other. And anybody who knows about a certain goddess knows why the names of these are connected to each other.
Okay.
The first one is called Crossroads, and it's about somebody that I know and love very much.
That could be a lot of people. Yes. You're a very loving guy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
whatever.
Sorry, head to that.
At least when he's somebody, on public.
And somebody who is familiar to some of us. Anyhow, it's called Crossroads. Which is a play on where we met. At the crossroads, where everything once so certain is now like walking on the shifting sands in an hourglass, the traveler stands. Before him, the future. Behind him, memories, secrets, enemies, friends. Self-indulgence, the doorway for his eventual self-discovery. He has done a great many things. Some have brought sorrow, some joy. Careless actions sometimes caused pain. Every action, a temporary fix, a needle filled with artificial happiness, the rush of fleeting ecstasy replaced by the withdrawal of a sometimes medusine reality. Now the new road must be chosen. The traveler can no longer rely on the old way to satisfy his hunger. Change, life's only constant. A harsh master forces his hand. Each path is paved with questions. What will be gained? What will be lost? Is this the right move? How can he be sure? Daunting questions might forge a chain of fears holding him back from his destiny. Weighing all the costs, the traveler picks a road. A new adventure about to begin. Wherever it leads, whatever the perils, a move is made that best serves his future. And when the world turns full circle, and if he should someday return to where the journey began, somebody will be waiting to welcome him home. And the companion piece to this is called Hecate's Challenge. Hecate being, amongst other things, the goddess of crossroads. There was a time when all he could do was run. Run from the cadaverous semblance of his twin soul. A manacle of Hephaestian proportion, forged by fear, or perhaps unsupported ego, driven to the brink of madness, then diving in head first. A mindless marathon drives him to Hecate's dark domain. She issues her challenge, and he falls to his knees, for only on his knees can his journey be continued. His only clothing, a perfect weakness. His only weapon, faith undefined. And his only comfort, a blossoming knowledge that he could never truly be alone. Others have worn a path for him to tread and hold his chain to guide him home.
Beautiful.
Good, good.
Have we got time for one more, Chris? Dominguez.
Oh, another one?
I think I woke him up over
no,
there.
No. I was listening. I was listening intently. Very intently.
And again, everybody out there, thank you very much for people who are listening. I know it takes, it's a lot of concentration to listen to poetry. So I really want to thank you for your concentration. And if you're still listening, you know.
And thanks, Merlin, for inviting me out tonight.
Yes. I'm really glad you were on.
Well, yeah. You said no love poetry, so we'll get around to it.
Oh, good.
Well, those were all about
good.
Love, too.
Yeah.
All right, so this is
good.
They were all love.
Exactly.
Go out on a positive note, yeah.
Gallons, well, I don't know about positive.
Well,
sorry. We'll work on it.
That might be stretching.
Maybe get even anyway.
Yeah. Gallons and gallons of wine, I swim in gallons and gallons of wine, I lost my soul in gallons and gallons of wine. I lost my soul in the solder of a stained glass sun that hangs above your toilet. Lost my soul in little bottles that contain seawater from various American coasts. Lost my soul in the threads of cross-stitched crosses in the grains of Purple Heart and Paduke. Lost my soul in that stack of five nickels that hides behind your alarm clock in your old room. Lost my soul in hundreds of letters and thousands of poems that fly out into the silence and are never responded to or echoed back. Lost my soul in foot massages, exploring each other's internal organs and how they connect to toes. Lost my soul in the guts of rice paper stuffed with shrimp and tofu. Lost my soul in the scales of diamondback rattlesnakes that carry my soul back into the crevices of the canyon. Lost my soul on picnic tables making love in rain. In the middle of a church road, we, like dinosaurs trapped in the La Brea pit of Merlot, we struggled to free ourselves but then submitted to the process of fossilization. Lost my soul in games of backgammon, competition, angry when a double is rolled. Lost my soul swim racing each other in West Texas lakes. You in green bikini, me in Speedo. I'm so sorry that not many pictures exist of you from that trip.
My own narcissism. Lost my soul in the films of Fellini, Anne of Green Gables, and Shelley Duvall's fairy tales. Lost my soul gathering shells with you on Bolivar Peninsula doing coastal gymnastics at dusk. Lost my soul in little valentines that hang from the interior of your car, each one signed with the ink of naivete. Lost my soul in the emerald seas of luck, luckiness in that greenness, that same greenness you appeared in my own eyes during your South Carolinian reveries. Lost my soul in the lies I've told, white, black, and blue lies that you smell like jasmine vines in April. Lost my soul in walks around the block, rosewood and hawthorn playing memory games with azalea bushes and barking beagles. Lost my soul in the laughs of your orgasm, in the moistness of our lizard mating dances, during Hamlet soliloquies and over-intellectualized plays about how Heisenberg was really theorizing about love. Which particle am I? Which particle am I? Lost my souls during fights where steering wheels and our own skulls became the victims' pasta pot lids and plastic Mexican restaurant chairs. Lost my soul in the cooing of pigeons in the a.m. and the buzz of midnight mosquitoes and the panting of dehydrated puppies. Lost my soul in mashed potato earplugs that I proudly wear and scars on your elbow from football tackles and spider bites on the back of your calf. Lost my soul in roosting peacocks playing bagpipes while we steer ourselves down a bayou that defines the core of both of our beings. And lost my soul with you on my shoulders playing tambourine to the gods of bluegrass. I lost my soul in gallons and gallons of wine, gallons and gallons of wine. I still be thirsty but not quite drunk enough.
Sounds like love to me. Definitely.
If not lust.
Well, that was our first show. So every third Friday, we will Bobby and I will be back, and we'll have different guests every time. And again, thank you for your patience and your concentration. And thanks to Chris for helping us, and Jimmy for letting us be on.
Letting us do this thing, because, you know, this is, you know, there's an old saying. That, you know, there's a horrible old thing that says that, you know, about sticks and stones, that words can not hurt you and all that. Well, they can, but they can also heal you.
Yes.
They can. Yeah.
Yes.
They can make things better. Oh. And that's part of what I hope people get.
That's a good statement of purpose as anything I could come up with, definitely. And lest I forget, too, thanks to our two guests, Jose and Dominguez, because, you know, gotta have guests to keep the show, because, you know, just hearing Bobby and I read over and over again, we get pretty boring.
This is not going to be the Bobby and David show.
No, so we'll try to have a bunch of variety and read other people's poems and continue on, and there will be some little history glimpses too in upcoming shows. So
we'll try to explore some of that whole history, the people who have come before us and put words down,
right?
Who are a part of our community? GLBT and everything in between.
Great gay lineage of the arts, and how it fits in with the whole world, and how the whole world would be boring without it. So anyway, on and on. Let's so good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night and goodbye.
Hartman.
Yes.
Coming out.
You know, I'd never get tired of that song. I know I've said that before. And what year is that CD? Can you read it? It's the 90s.
99.
Yeah. Anyway, you're listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude. I'm Jimmy Carper. I'm Chris Arison. We are co-executive producers. And we've got a bunch of folks in the talk studio. But I want to talk about the MBBs.
Yeah.
My MBBs.
Yay.
Yes. Because we got two letters this week, one from Tigger. And he has... Boy, he talks a lot in a few words this week, I'm telling you. Because he gives us big props for doing After Hours. And as he says, you guys still rule as the kings and queens of queer radio, followed closely by queer voices. That said, I enjoyed what I heard on the Clear Channel show last weekend. That's the Radio with a Twist.
Yes.
It's on from 10 to midnight, I believe, Friday night?
Saturday night.
Saturday night. Okay, so I can still watch it. Okay. But he likens it to, you know, because they don't really play out musicians except for, like, Melissa and Elton and, you know, the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
He likens it a lot to Will and Grace. Of the radio set. So I thought that was really, really clever analogy.
And not necessarily a bad thing.
No.
You know?
Yeah. No, because as he puts it, and as J.D. Doyle put it in his review, that it probably will help bridge the gap between heteros and homos.
Yeah, but there's one thing about it. I only saw one other review about it. It was on LSA. And it was difficult for me to hold my tongue because, you know, the person who put in that review,
yes,
you know, had some trouble last year and got some unfavorable media attention.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the only places that was would have given him a fair shot to say his piece, and we offered it and weren't able to do that due to you know, not really wanting to talk about it too much because
okay.
You give one. But, you know, someone who gave him the props and all that, you know, you think that this Radio with a Twist would have given him...
Sure.
Anything.
No, I mean, that they wouldn't.
Looked,
yeah. No.
Would have looked at him twice, covered it as a special interest story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, before we go, we want to tell you about... No.
No, they play fluff.
It's right. You know, and it's national fluff. It comes out of Atlanta, and you know, we talked about the article in the Voice. You know,
mm-hmm.
Southern Voice West.
Yes.
You know, basically, it was an article in Atlanta that you know, because apparently we don't have people who can write here in Houston anymore. It was carried in the Houston paper. And, you know, they talk about, you know, all the great queer programming that you have out in California. Well, you know...
We have more than they do.
Right. And why isn't the, you know, isn't KPFT mentioned in the show?
Yeah, I mean...
Because we're center of the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to so many... It's always been my biggest gripe is that the queer community thinks that it begins and ends with the East Coast and or the West Coast.
But see, here's the thing. That article, even though if you go over that East Coast, West Coast philosophy, I think they mentioned This Way Out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which is West Coast.
Which is West Coast. They didn't mention IMRU.
Mm.
Which is West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't mention, I forget what the name of the program is, on WBAI.
Yeah.
You know, so basically, this was someone over in Hot Atlanta who wrote this story, and oh, by the way, I found these things here.
Hmm.
And you know, it's one of those things that we look at the fact the show is 18 years.
Yes,
right,
over
right.
18 years old.
Over 18 years old. You know, we've got more programming for the gay community on this station than the rest of the Pacifica network combined.
Yep.
Well, I've said it before that in the 18 years, and way back 18 years ago, there were times when KPFT and shows like this and this show kept me sane when I was stuck out in the boonies or something. I was younger and much more volatile and, you know, whatever. And it kept me from just being so depressed that I know, God knows what.
Well, I mean, part of it comes from me is the fact that, you know, we're sitting here, I keep hearing the stories, you know, we're fawning over Logo, which we can't get in Houston.
Yeah, I know.
You know, we fawn over Here TV, which is pay-per-view.
Yeah,
you know?
And I won't do it.
We fawn over QTV because, you know, it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or, what is it, Out Radio on... I forget if it's Sirius or
XM. It's addressing the gay community as a consumer group.
Yeah,
that's what it really is.
Yeah. I think, I don't mean to sound kind of bitchy about this, but a lot of those shows are doing what a lot of people do in forgetting that. The folks who did come before them,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
the folks on whose shoulders they're standing yeah. to be where they're at now.
Yeah.
I mean, we've come a long way in those
yeah,
years.
But,
you know,
but you
I
know,
mean,
when we start just holding up, you know, wow, we've got a national 2-hour show.
Mm.
You know, and we're all falling over it.
This way out's
an hour, 2-hour show.
Right.
And it's been around for a long time.
No, it's a half hour show.
But it does.
No,
it's the news. But it does.
No. It's a half hour show.
Okay. It does represent something in that it's viable commercial.
Uh-huh.
And that is a landmark. You know, it does mean something. What
Much
I object,
like
what
Will
I,
and Grace.
Right. And what I object to more is not including everyone else.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like, well, if you don't look like, if you can't pass, if you don't have nice middle class values, if you don't, you know, if you dress funny, then, you know, please yeah. don't be in our gay pride parade because we're now trying to get everybody to like us.
Oh yeah, I
and all that
days.
Kind of stuff, you know, and
yeah.
and I think it's a little bit of that of like, oh, let's forget about all the uncomfortable kind of outsider stuff. We only want this presentable image that crosses over.
Yeah, well,
let's get back to the MBB letters.
Yes.
You know, I'm not trashing what Tigger says in there. You know, it's one of those personal things.
No, I'm not trashing it at all.
Especially when it comes to the fact that, you know, here in 2 weeks, we're going to be spending 2 weeks asking
right.
for pledge drives.
Yes.
And, you know, we're getting all these people talking how great, you know, I'll go spend $8 to go see Brokeback Mountain a second or a third time,
mm-hmm.
you know. And you're not going to represent to a station here that's playing being a part of the community.
The Brokeback Mountain wouldn't have gotten there if it wouldn't have been for the groundwork.
And we're not importing the stuff in from some other place. We're doing it locally.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So
what Tigger sums it up is he says, so I think radio with a twist is okay, but it'll never do as much for the community or save the lives that you guys do.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
And he wants to know, his best friend wants to know about the lesbian segment, and in case he missed it earlier, it's the second Friday of every month starting in February. And good news, his mom came to see him.
Yay.
And that really, really helped. It's the first time he's seen her since August.
I think it's the first time I've seen anybody.
Yeah.
Not just his mother. Anybody's come to visit him.
Okay, and January 06 issue of Out Magazine was divided because page 73 contains graphic depictions of men engaging in homosexual behavior. And, you know, I just finished that magazine, and I don't know what the hell was on page 73 because it...
You'll have to go back and check.
I will. I will, because it wasn't all that, you know.
Well, there is the new crackdown, so basically, you know, an Abercrombie and Fitch ad will probably get booted for it now.
Mm. Okay, and then he has this wonderful symbol, which I take for him being a gay Christian.
Hmm.
So.
The XPS,
and
the XPS
sent,
with a lambda in the middle.
And he sent me a lovely, lovely
You've got
happy
to love
birthday
the thought,
drawing.
Please.
Yes.
You've got to love the thought, please.
Thank
you.
Somehow they let his
so
sketch
much.
Go through.
Wonder never ceased.
But apparently his package was covered by a package, so
yes.
he was allowed to go through.
Yeah, I guess so.
We got a letter from Jaime.
Hey, and Jaime had a lot to say, too.
Oh, yeah.
Woo-wee!
I'll cut to the good part here first.
There's so many good parts.
Yeah.
Next
Yeah, his friend there, who's going to be getting out soon, he's a little upset that, you know, his queer as a $3 bill friend was going to be leaving. But supposedly he's got good contacts in the GLBT community here in Houston.
And he better show up here, if only to do a shout-out.
I'm stuck on that one paragraph.
Yes, I know, and I know which one it is.
I think 8 or 9 reasons why,
Yes. Goodness.
Wow. Big things do come in small packages.
You size queen, you.
Well, sadly, the reverse also thing. Small things come in big packages. But hey, enough about me.
Hey.
He hopes it's finding everyone fine. He's still listening every week as long as you guys are on the air and continue to do so. The After Hours and Queer Voices programming are the height of my week, and I never allow anything to interfere with my tuning in. I'm queer, and I love being queer and listening to the issues, the music, and the voices of the GLBT community. Always makes me so happy, and he loves it.
Mm-hmm. We love him. He's been working on some artwork.
Yeah, and it's, well, the one thing I want to get on here is, when we talk about the fact of missing the MBB letters, and, you know, it's not because of just missing them out. We're kind of worried, you know, we've kind of gotten lost.
Or something has happened to
us. Something has been happening.
Yeah.
So, no, it's not a shot at the
No.
The MBBs, because, you know, we don't write back. So.
I know, and that's it's always... And it made me feel guilty, but we just, I, it's...
He says he's always been happy with the acknowledgement over the radio.
Good.
And he's working on a painting for Jimmy, and he's, some of his artwork was originally going to be, was on a postage stamp.
Yes.
It's Cafe Press.
Uh-huh.
Is having some over there. If you do a search of James D.
Nope. Don't go there.
We can't give the whole name. That's right.
No.
So we can't tell you how to search for it. Well, do a search on there for Imagine World Peace, and maybe you'll find it.
Yes.
So yeah, we don't give the full name.
Nope.
So oops. I caught myself before I got to the end.
Thank you.
Oh, and for some reason, I'm back to that other paragraph.
Yeah. What do you know?
He's also trying to get some of his artwork displayed in a museum here, a gallery here in the Heights area.
Yeah.
So.
I know it's not that Dimmondale, but I'll be moving in that neighborhood soon.
All right. Right around the corner from me.
Yes.
And it attached a little article here about George
Takei.
Takei, I keep forgetting. You know,
Sulu.
Yeah, who had come out.
Yes.
After spending years of boldly going where no man had gone before.
Ooh. Huh? Well, he's had a lover for 16 years, too.
And he only waited till he was 68 years old.
Yeah, well, hey.
Better
late
than never.
And something I didn't mention earlier.
Not that anybody ever didn't figure that out.
Every fourth Monday of the month at 8 p.m. is... Queer Music Heritage.
Cool.
Yes, produced by J.D. Doyle, part of Queer Voices. And this month, he has an exclusive interview with Levi Kreis, plus tributes to your girlfriend. People who have been listening to this show for many, many years will recognize that group, Your Girlfriend. Bill Folk and Larry Paulette. Oh, no, Your Girlfriend has the best song, best protest song called We Won't Be Silent.
All right. So, last thing. Scott always sits at the microphone and never says anything.
Yes.
Let's congratulate him. He came out to his brother this past week.
All right. Yeah.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.